department and everyone else who has joined this meeting. Ms. Majalamba, can you give me an idea of attendance and apologies, please?
Good afternoon and thank you, Chair. Present is Dr. Jacobs, Mr. Munyai, Ms. Geller, Dr. Harvard, Mr. Suela, Ms. Wilson, Ms. Ishmael, Dr. Tembekwayo, Ms. Chirwa, and Mr. Van Staden. I've received an apology from Ms. Suker. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Mr. Joe Hutler, PLO of the Minister, can you tell us, maybe introduce the Minister, tell us who is here?
Good afternoon, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. Honourable Chair, the Minister is logging in, but we do have the DG on the platform, and I'm sure DG can take over and introduce the team.
Thank you. We'll have the introductions a bit later. Let us just go through a couple of formalities. So, I also have the apology of the Deputy Minister, Ms. Majalamba, for noting, who is abroad, and the Minister is in the process of joining. I see the DG and some DDGs have joined, but we will get back to them just now. Just a reminder, Honourable Members, that this virtual meeting is deemed to be the precinct of Parliament, and therefore constitutes a meeting of a committee of the National Assembly for official purposes only. In addition to the rules of virtual sitting, the rules of the National Assembly, including the rules of debate, apply. Members enjoy the same powers and privileges that apply in the sitting of the National Assembly. Members should equally note that anything said in the virtual platform is deemed to have been said to the House and may be ruled upon. All members of login shall be considered be present and are requested to mute their microphones and only unmute their microphones when recognized to speak. This is because the microphones are very sensitive and will pick up noise which might disturb the attention of other members. When recognized to speak, please unmute your microphone and connect your video. Members may make use of the icons on the bar at the bottom of their screens, which is an option that allows a member to put up his or her hand to raise points of order. The Secretariat will assist in alerting the chairperson to members requesting to speak. When using the virtual system, members are urged to refrain or desist from unnecessary points of order. Honourable Members, there are 2 points which I want to highlight. The one is that you please switch on your videos when you speak. And the second one is that you raise your hands on the virtual platform if you want to raise a point of order, and I will give attention to you. Thank you very much. With that having been said, I am looking at the platform. DG Dr. Buthelezi, if you can maybe introduce your team to us, please.
Thank you very much, and very good afternoon to the chairperson, the honorable members of the portfolio committee. Assure the chairperson, I just spoke to the minister. He was is trying to log in as we speak, but in the interim, I will introduce the team. The team that we have here accompanying the minister is Ms. Jeanette Hunter, who is the Deputy Director General responsible for primary health care, Dr. Nicholas Crisp, who's the Deputy Director General responsible for the National Health Insurance. We've got Ms. Valerie Rennie, who's the Deputy Director General responsible for corporate services. Then we've got Mr. Paswa Mamogale, our brand new Chief Finance Officer, who started this month. We've got Mr. Morewane, who's the acting DDG for HIV, TB, maternal, child, and women's health. We also have Mr. Andre Venter, who's the Chief Director for Financial Accounting, who has been acting CFO before the appointment of the CFO. Then we also have Ms. Thulile Zondi, who's the Chief Director responsible for monitoring and evaluation in the department. We have the Chief of Staff, Dr. Kwanele Siziba. We have the Parliamentary Liaison Officer, that is Mr. Joe Khata and his team that supports him. We also have Mr. Mahlako, who's the Acting Chief Director, responsible for District Health Services. We then have Mr. Mamburu Masemola, who is a Chief Audit Executive in the department. Those are the members that I have noted that have joined. I might have missed, then we also have Ms. Milani Volmarans, who is our Chief Director for Planning and Digital Health Strategy, and Mr. Medok Ramatuba, currently acting Chief Director for Environmental Health, but he is also responsible for malaria control. And then we have Dr. Nontlantla Makhanya, who is the Chief Nursing Officer in the department. That is the team, Chair. My apologies if I missed anyone, but I've tried to cover as many of them as possible. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, DG, and for the introductions. I see that the Minister is here. Minister, very welcome to you also. I will allow you to do some introductory remarks, and then we will go straight on to the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. My apologies, I struggled a bit to get into the platform. Thank you very much. The Deputy Minister is out of the country on official travel. I doubt if you will be able to join us. I'm going to just do a few, can we go into the remarks? Honorable members, thank you very much for us to present this annual report, just as a form of background from my side to say, as we present this annual report, we need to keep in mind that the year under review, which is 1st of April 2021 up to 31st of March 2022, that's the year at which we had the tail end of the beta wave of the COVID-19. And then later on into the June of that financial year, the peak of the Delta wave, and at the end of the year we had the Omicron wave. So three waves, one at the tail end and two full waves of the COVID-19 within this financial year. But also as a result of that, therefore, a lot of rearrangements within the department. Vaccination program kicked off within this financial year, a little bit of it at the tail end of the previous financial year with the Sisonke program. But the real rollout of vaccination, all the arrangements, all the preparations and actual implementation happened, and setting up the platform, especially for vaccination with a public-private partnership. We're bringing in new systems in terms of, you know, setting up the EVDS and all the systems. All this happened, and the actual delivery of vaccines and rollout and opening stations, as will indicate. And also just to keep in mind that, unfortunately, in our department as a ministry, also instability as a result of the digital vibes saga. We saw a situation where former minister took leave and ultimately resigned. Acting minister was appointed for just over 2 months, and I was appointed at the beginning of August. But unfortunately, because of the digital vibes again, the DG also, implications from the SIU, he had to be suspended, went through a process and just late in August. And I think was away for about 4 months with the acting DG, thanks to Dr. Nicholas Chris, who held on the reins. And later at the end of the year, after the Dr. Bitelezi was cleared, he was able to come back. At the same time, we lost the previous CFO, CFO who had acted, Mr. van der Merwe, who had been in the department, I think for close to 10 years, went for greener pastures. We then had to have an acting CFO, but the first acting CFO had indicated that he would not take more than 6 months. So when we tried to persuade him, he was not ready. So we had to get another acting CFO until, as indicated, that we have now a new CFO. So those were some of the instabilities. Over and above that, issues around Civitas building, movement of staff, and all that. If you can go to the next slide, just to... So this is just, again, just to confirm what I've said in terms of the waves. You can go to the next one. I don't have to take too much time. The vaccination rollout, the peak of the real vaccination rollout, with all the preparations, with all the ups and downs, procurement, distribution, opening sites, signing contracts with suppliers, also with service providers, partners in terms of the vaccination sites. As we would see, the next slide, please, we would see that we had started with about 500, target of 500 vaccination sites, ended up with just over 3,000, just under 3,500. All the ups and downs in terms of, you know, preparation for the vaccination. We can go to the next one, just want to zero in also on, you know, some of the challenges. We know how we went through the vaccination, bringing in private sites, bringing in the medical schemes, hard negotiations in terms of making sure that also private providers, chain pharmacies and other providers like Discovery, Medical Aid and others, GEMS, that they could also provide sites which would vaccinate not only their members, but also even members of the public who are not on insurance. We can go to the next one so that I can, just to, as we come to towards the end, just to indicate that as a result of this very complex agreements with the public sector, very groundbreaking in a way, but also complex in terms of especially bringing together insured and uninsured members of the public and making sure people can walk into any, whether it's a public sector site or a private sector site, the payments, reimbursements, models which had to be agreed upon, including the fact that when insured members, members of the public are vaccinated in the public sites, ourselves as the Department of Health have to claim the cost of that vaccination from their medical aids. This was agreed and also endorsed by the Council for Medical Schemes. And this process is still going on. And as we would see later on, and as you have been briefed by the Auditor General, that actually is the basis on which we have been qualified, the audit, we've got the qualification of the audit because of the fact that the 2.079 billion, which was accrued as a result of these claims, had to be settled. And there was an issue from the Auditor General that they believe that the information in terms of us to arrive at this figure might not be realizable. But what I can say to the members is that already by the end of the financial year, out of this 2.7079 billion, 500 million had already been recovered. As we speak now, by the end of September, a total of 1.3 billion has been recovered from the medical schemes. But that process is still ongoing. The Council for Medical Schemes has given an extension in terms of the period through which we can continue to claim from the medical schemes over and above the 30 days and the further extension. So we have 365 days now to continue to claim. Of course, as members would be aware that medical schemes don't want easily to part with money. So whenever there's a claim which is submitted, they will want to question, including whether the member at the time of vaccination was indeed in good standing in terms of their contributions to the medical schemes. But we believe that we continue to do our best. There was a difference, of course, with the AG in terms of whether all this money will be realized. And that constitutes the audit finding. So with that, Honorable Chair, let's go into the meat of the programs. I would want the DG to then take the members through the programs and the performance outcomes in terms of those programs. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Minister, for giving a good background so that we can then take over. We'll now go through...
DG, can you give me a minute? DG, whenever you speak, your system types for you. So it does it in two ways. It types on our system even when you're not presenting, so that whatever you're speaking in the background, we see on our system. Can you maybe remove that extra system you have there?
I will need to be assisted, Chair. I don't know what I've touched. I see it's writing. I don't know how to take it off. Maybe any tech-savvy person, if they can help me.
DG, maybe it's Milani. Maybe if you go out and just share again, it could assist.
Okay.
I'll give you a few minutes, DG. You can go out and log in again.
And just make sure that when you share, you don't include subtitles, DG. So I think if you share now, just share on the Zoom as is.
Yes. I think I have shared. Let me see.
Yeah, I put it on slideshow now.
No, it's still writing.
I see. Let me just check if it's on the Zoom. Possibly that it's something that's been put onto the Zoom platform. No. Maybe can the person that's managing the platform just check if they have put on subtitles as part of the presentation?
I think it is from the D side, from it's from his own system and not from our system.
Yes.
DG, do you want to share with me and then I can share on the screen?
Okay. Okay, let me email.
I will open it up and
see
it on the screen.
Okay, my apologies, Chair. Let me.
DG, have you emailed to Milani?
Yes, I've just pressed send now, Minister.
Minister DG and Chairperson, DG, can I just use the one that Joe has forwarded to us to share?
I've sent it, it should appear on your site. It's got just a minor adjustment. And also I sent it to Joe as well.
Any progress?
DG, this is taking long. I don't know whether there are major changes from what you... is Melanie able to project now?
Yes, she's received it. My apologies, Minister. Thanks.
Okay, you can proceed then.
Yes, thanks, Milan. Can you put it on slideshow and you go to first program administration? Yes, you can pass this slide. This is the purpose of the presentation. And then, we'll start here and start with program one. Thank you. You can move on, Milani. Thank you very much. This is program one. And the main two indicators here is us. It's an audit. And in terms of the achievement, yes, we have received a qualified audit and we have we've been qualified because of some issues with the revenue collection for the COVID vaccination, which was done. Then the second issue is the policy on medical legal. This policy, we are waiting for the finalization of the work by the South African Law Reform Commission, so we could then be able to publish the policy, and work is advanced at this level. Next slide, please. Then the other issue is the case management system for management of the cases, which we have now decentralized it to the provinces. Most of the provinces, actually four provinces did take up the system, but then there are other provinces that have done, are still negotiating with the service providers, which is Gauteng, Mpumalanga and Limpopo, and we're working on this matter. Then the next one is on health messages, where we were able to actually overperform in terms of how we broadcast messages, mainly on media, targeting social media and audio broadcast media. Next slide, please. Then as mentioned, the key issues that we need to attend to here, the first one that we'll work on, and we'll talk about it when we talk about the audit report, is how do we turn around the audit status since we were now qualified for the first time in 10 years. And then it's the issue of a rollout of the case management system in the remaining provinces, and then the policy and legal framework, which is actually dependent on the finalization of the work by the South African Law Reform Commission. Next slide, please. Program two is National Health Insurance. The first part is on ensuring that we do have the fund functional by 2023-24. Of course, this is largely dependent on the work of the Parliament to get the bill through to the Act. And our job is to ensure that we support that process as much as possible, technically as the department. And then the other work is on ensuring that the medical aid beneficiaries are registered into the HPRS system. Of course, there is quite a bit of issues here, and we hope that to achieve this faster, probably need to work on some amendments, more specifically because we now have the POPI Act. So we need to see how we can use our own Medical Schemes Act to address this matter. Thank you. Next slide, please. Then is a PHC benefit package. That framework was developed but has not yet been approved by the NHC, and we'll push that it gets approved before the end of this year because the work has already been done. Then the next issue is the CCMDP, which is the treatment delivery program, which of course we actually accelerated during COVID as we did not want people to get to facilities, hence we overperformed on this program much more above the target that we wanted. And then the next one is on the issue of us using the stock visibility system, and we managed to actually overperform here by more than 43 facilities as compared to what we wanted to achieve. Next slide, please. And then, as mentioned, the whole issue of the NHI bill is at the hands of the lawmakers. We will support wherever we can support. Most of the work will move faster once this process has been done. We will ensure that the service benefits package is tabled for approval. And then we also deal with the issue of the medical aid beneficiaries. And as a by the way, matter, if we solve this issue of having all medical aid beneficiaries, we wouldn't be qualified because it would be very easy to verify the medical membership, the medical scheme membership of the people that we're vaccinating. Next slide, please. Then program three, the first one is we're giving ourselves quite a high target. This was quite a tricky part when we started with the vaccination program. As the minister has mentioned, approaches kept on changing. Vaccines did not come as expected at the right time. We had a delay and we had to change to a risk adjusted strategy, starting with the elderly, comorbidities. So the target that was set was based really on the main adult population. We only managed then to do just above 20 million, which was almost half of what we had wanted. But this target we should actually have revised when there were changes in the vaccination program and the delay also in the vaccination. Then the next slide is on the youth zones, where we underperformed by 236 facilities. And here it was mainly the reporting system, which has now been cleaned up, because it did not then get data from the other provinces. And we would like to assure the members of the portfolio committee that with this system in place now, we are going to reach our target in terms of these facilities. Next slide, please. Yes, and then on non-communicable diseases, we did manage to get the approval of the strategic plan of non-communicable diseases, though it was approved within the reporting period, but the publishing of that was done just after the period. It's already been published now. And then also we then were able to develop our national tobacco control strategy, which is multi-sectoral. Actually, this has now actually gone as far as the bill which has gone through cabinet. We hope it will be then going into the legislature. Then the state patients, we overperformed there with thought, based on the historical data, we thought we'll be able to admit 75 state patients, but we managed to admit 215 more of those because of the more improved collaboration between the different sectors, especially the justice, the JCPS cluster, and ourselves. Next slide, please. Then it's again on the first slide, when looking at improving quality and safety of care, we're able to train more numbers of doctors and nurses on this one, so we overperformed. And then also looking at the food control in terms of the assessment, policy assessment of how that is done, especially looking at the 75% target that is put, we're able actually to overperform and did two hospitals more that participated. We're able to approve the maternity care guidelines and also the neonatal care guidelines. Next slide, please. And then, as mentioned, we need to be working on a few issues. I think the main one here that is very important is the issue of continuously trying to improve the uptake of the vaccination. We can already see that we are seeing some increased numbers in different countries, so we need to continue and not give up on getting more people to get vaccinated, especially the 18 to 34. Next slide, please. Next slide. Yes, here then again now coming to primary health care, which is program four. Here we have a national quality improvement program where we had targeted the number of facilities. though we underperformed with clinics, but we managed to overperform with hospitals. And in addition, we also included the emergency medical services in terms of this matter. So we are moving very good with that program. Then the next slide is on IDR clinics, where we underperformed by 172 patient facilities. This is mainly due to COVID, and we had to move staff, and the focus was mainly COVID. But with now with the integration of COVID into routine primary healthcare services that we've started to do, we believe that we'll be able to do a catch up on this program. Next slide, please. And then policy on traditional medicine, this was delayed. We're unable to get it through. It was presented, it had some issues. We are also working, this is quite a bit of a difficult sector, but there has been meetings led by the relevant DDG just to get to them, because we can't just have a policy for them and then they are not part of it. So we're able to get on that. And then the next one was on EMS in terms of compliance with the regulations. This was achieved for all the provinces. Next slide, please. And then ports of entry. Here we wanted to check the compliance with international health regulations, and we're able to do to reach 18 ports that we targeted. So we reached the target. And then also in terms of environmental health services, we also wanted to check if there is compliance with environmental health norms and standards by the metropolitan and district municipalities. We managed to do one extra municipality compared to the target of 11. We did 12. And we are finding that. Next slide, please. Then on the issue of clinic committees, where we promote community participation, we're able to overperform. We wanted to do 200 clinics in this one, but we're able to do 193 clinics more. Then clients lost to follow up because of the catch-up plans that you put in for HIV and TB. We overperformed as community health workers, did a lot of work to get people to back to care in what we call the comeback campaign. A welcome back campaign, so we overperformed here. And then also on the ward-based outreach teams, we overperformed by more than almost 1,000 facilities in addition to what we targeted, where the clinics and the district took it up to themselves to ensure that these teams are back in place so that they are able to assist us. Next slide, please. Then I've mentioned the issues that we need to do. I think on the issue of national quality improvement, it's some work that we do with the Office of Health Standards Compliance, and through the NHI office, we've even been able to second the public health registrar to assist them with some tools that we need to be using for the assessment of the general practices. I've spoken about policy on traditional medicine and also on the IDR clinic. Next slide, please. Next slide. Yes, here we reached all our targets in program 5. We had 100% performance in terms of the targets that we had wanted to achieve, mostly related to our infrastructure program, either in repairs or revitalization. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. Then on program 6, and then we had an issue of the accreditation of nursing colleges on a specialist nursing training programs, where 9 of the provincial public health colleges were all were able to get through the accreditation. And then we did develop a governance system working with the nursing directorates. Here we managed to achieve 8 provinces out of 9. The only one that was not achieved was the Limpopo province, because they actually dissolved. They are a directorate of nursing, but now we are working on correcting that so that when we move forward, they do have a directorate for nursing. Next slide, please. Then looking at the community service policy, publishing of that, that was delayed by there's a lot of work that is taking place at the National Health Council level, and it's a work that does not only reside with the department, because when you review community service, you also need to review the internship. When you review the internship, you then need to review your undergraduate training, because it's quite a lot of stakeholders, but we put together a team that's working on this one, and we hope that in this financial year, we'll be able to have a reviewed policy and community service. Then the placement of eligible people for community service. Here, there's no one who was eligible, and the correct name is eligible, who was not placed for community service in South Africa. Next slide, please. And then in terms of the vaccination site information systems that we have to develop for the vaccination sites and register them on EVPS, initially, as the minister was mentioning, we thought we'd start with about 500 sites, but we ended up working in more than 3,000 sites because there was quite a lot of pressure for us to reach as many South Africans. Noting that for us, vaccination was priority was saving lives. Everything else was secondary, including a revenue collection. And then obviously then the next one is on the system for TB that is being reviewed. We do have a digital health strategy, and the digital health team is actually integrating all systems. So they have reviewed systems for all diseases that talk to each other, not only being just linear and dealing with one disease. And then on the research priorities, yes, those were revised and actually published. Thank you very much. Next slide. Then I've mentioned the issues that we need to work on just to address areas of underperformance, engagement of Limpopo, the review of the community service policy, and the whole the work on the harmonization of all the patient reporting systems. Next slide, please. Then in terms of the targets, only one program reached 100%, which is program 5, hospital services. All the other programs performed below the target. And as we've gone through and mentioned what were the problems in terms of the areas where we're not able to meet the targets that were set up. Next slide, please. Next slide. Then in terms of human resources at head office, mainly here on the vacancy rate, again, the whole stability that the minister referred to, but more importantly is the cap that has been given on our compensation of employees at head office. Those are the vacancy rates with a total of 15.9. But I must say that these have now been cut as we are continuously filling posts. We've recently filled the post of DDG Hospital Services, the post of the CFO. There's quite a few other posts that have been filled during this time. And by the time we come back next year, we will definitely be much more better when it comes to vacancy rate that we have at headquarters. Next slide, please. Thank you very much. With the indulgence of the chair, may I hand over to Mr. Andre Fenter, who was the acting CFO at the time of this report, to then take over with the financial information. Over to you, Andre.
Thank you, DG. Good afternoon, Honorable Chair, Minister, members, DG, and colleagues. My apology, I'm working from my desktop chairperson, and I don't have a camera to display my face. I hope it's in order with chairperson. Chair, if we look at the budget allocation for the 21-22 financial year, there was a total budget allocated of 65.9 billion rand, and a total of 65.1 billion rand was spent at year end, representing 98.8%. In our view, this is exceptionally good given the challenges that we had with COVID, but also with the relocation of the building, office accommodation, and accessing transversal systems to process payments and to ensure that the department is supported both from the finance side and the supply chain side to ensure that operations can continue. So I will go into the next slide, Chair, where we will then go into economical classification, Chair. It was indicated that we had a number of vacancies, hence we could only spend 95% of our COE budget. Our goods and services budget, despite all of the challenges, was spent 95.6%. That is exceptionally good given the challenges that we had. But some of the savings emanating from the goods and services is due to the COVID challenges. Seeing that we didn't travel that much, we had to rely on the internet for our meetings. So telephone costs were reduced, equally stationary for the staff who were not in the offices. So we had some savings coming from that. So it was not all that bad. Then for the transfer payments, this is where our conditional grants sits, and the majority of these transfers relates to the conditional grants. Only 1.6 million rands were not spent during the financial year. And then the capital is low spending, unfortunately, because this is where our infrastructure projects lies. But together with that is also our equipment, Chairperson. We all know that worldwide there was a shortage of semiconductor chips, essential equipment or a piece for our equipment, such as IT equipment, and therefore we could not procure all of those equipment that we envisaged to procure because the service providers couldn't supply us with the equipment. And likewise with the infrastructure projects, there were also challenges of getting supplies, cement and all of those requirements, steel and so forth, for the continuation of the infrastructure projects. The next slide, Chair, I will go through each program and fairly highlight what is sitting on the programs, and we will start off with program one. If we can get the next slide, please, Melanie. Program one, administration. We had a total budget of 828 million rand. For the financial year, we've spent 672 million rand. The lowest spending sits within management, and that is due to vacancies that we have in the department under corporate or a management program for program one. Then we also have our corporate services spending 82%. This is also linked to the equipment that we envisaged to procure, especially around the computers and IT equipment for the new building, together with the security equipment that we intended to procure before year end. Unfortunately, we were not successful in obtaining those pieces of equipment due to the semiconductor shortage, as well as equipment not being available at service providers. Fortunately, now we can see there's progress and things are getting back to normal, more or less. And then on the property management, we have expended 92%, Chair. There were some invoices outstanding from Department of Public Works, which we didn't get in time so that we could effect those payments within the financial year. Next slide, please. Program two, the NHI program. Chair, once again, program management, vacancy, 77% spent. The post was filled in June of last year, but still the office there is highly understaffed, and we are busy with recruitment of staff members for the program management and support of the DDG for NHI. Affordable medicines, Chair, we had a number of invoices that could not be processed for services rendered by Affordable Medicines. Likewise with our national health insurance, the underspending there relates basically to the CCMD program, where the invoices were received in time, but it could not be processed. Unfortunately, our logo system was offline due to internet connectivity between this building and the AB Kuma building and CITOS, our service provider for our transversal systems. Okay, the next slide is going into program three. A total of 55 billion rands, 55.7 billion rands were allocated to this program. Exceptionally well done by 55.5 billion rands expended, an amount of 146 billion rands, a million rands were unspent at year end, a total of 99.6%. I can highlight non-communicable diseases, which is sitting at 36.5%. And the main reason for that is the launch of the NCD campaign could not be done before year end. And likewise, the items which is required to run the campaign, those could not be procured before year end. And then there were also some small underspendings in terms of the COVID-19 running cost budget allocated, and that was for the transport and storage and distribution of vaccines, but also the admin fees that we need to pay to the private facilities for the uninsured patients vaccinated at those facilities. Those claims only came in after year end, and that formed part of the financial disclosures in the financial statements where the Auditor General raised some concerns. For the rest of the program, the expenditure is within norm, and I think they've done exceptionally well on the TB program. The TB campaign, or the annual TB World Day, that was is towards the end of March. Unfortunately, those invoices will only be arriving and be paid within the new financial year, but this is a recurring type of underspending then due to that program or project. Program four, primary health care chair, here we had a budget of 255.7 million rands, of which 251 million rands was expended. There is no significant underspending within this program. The underspending sits at 4.1 million rands, and once again, we are quite satisfied with what has happened in this program. And DG has alluded to some of the reasons why there were some underspendings in this program under the performance program. Program five, please. Program five, 99.5% spent, a total budget of 21.1 billion rands. 21 billion rands has been spent. 102 million rands underspent. Program management sitting at 74% chair. This post has been recently filled. It has been vacant for the past financial year. A new DDG has been appointed, and likewise in the case of NHI, there is some support staff also need to be appointed, and that will in the current financial year take up the expenditure significantly for the program management. Program six chair, we had a total budget of 6.4 billion rands. 6.3 billion rands has been expended. 82 million rands underspent. The 98.7% is within the norm, and there is no significant underspending within this program. The only one that I can highlight is the 60% and the health information monitoring and evaluation. And that is mainly due to a budget allocation which we have received from National Treasury. But based on an audit finding in a previous financial year, we need now to go through a competitive bid to continue the services with that specific service provider who have been rendering the services for many years to the department. We did approach the chief procurement officer to allow for a deviation to recognize this as a sole service provider. However, that was turned down. We are still in the current financial year experiencing the same challenges, and we are engaging National Treasury to find a solution how we can continue with these services and not get the services disrupted by the department and service provider who's running the services chain. The next slide will be on the conditional grants chair. Just as a high level, the total amount of 52.4 billion rands for the conditional grants was fully transferred to the provinces. So the national department transferred the full amount. The provincial health departments reported a 50.8 billion rand expenditure against the 52.4 billion rands transferred. And there is an underspending or funds still available from the provinces, 2.6 billion rands. Those will be requested for rollovers through the provincial rollover processes. And if successful, those will be added to the next year's budget. On this column, the third, fourth column chair, the provincial rollovers, those are the rollovers where they were underspending in the 2020-21 financial year, which was then rolled over to the 21-22 financial year. And the same process will be followed with the 2.6 billion rands underspending for the past financial year, the 21-22 financial year. Yeah, overall, the expenditure for the conditional grants sits at 95%, which is fairly well for the department, given the circumstances that we were under the past financial year. So it's slightly below the acceptable norm of 100%. I've indicated that those underspendings will be requested for rollovers into the new financial year. And then our infrastructure program performed, I don't want to use the word poor, but there were some challenges, but the challenges is not due to service providers. It was due to the availability of commodities to ensure that we can continue with the infrastructure projects. Fortunately, this financial year, we will not experience exactly the same and the same levels like we have experienced during the COVID period. Next slide, please. Chair, this slide presents the transfers to the various provinces. And here we can see how the provinces then applied those conditional grants received and what the expenditure was per province. It comes back to the total amount transferred was the 52.4 billion rand. However, if we add the 1 billion rand for the rollovers at provincial level, there was the 53.2 billion rand available for spending against the conditional grants. And out of that available funds, 50.8 billion rand was expended. This is just to share with members, honorable members, how the expenditure was per provincial health department, which is once again for the national department exceptionally well given the circumstances. Next slide, please. Just to share with honorable chair and members, the National Tertiary Services Grant, just as an indication, the total amount available for spending in the past financial year was 14 billion rands, of which then 15.3 billion rands was spent, 708 million rands underspent or not spent. And I really need to point out that underspent or the budget still available doesn't mean that nothing happened. In many instances in the finances, there are contracts in place, so there are actual commitments. Unfortunately, in the cash accounting environment, the commitments are not recognized as an expenditure, and therefore it reflects as amounts still available for spending. And this is why we are applying for rollover funds to ensure that those existing contracts and agreements that we have will be honored in the new financial year, especially also on procurement of equipment, which we have already committed, but the cash could not flow before year end. This is why we are asking for the rollovers. So it's not all in all instances a real saving or an underspending. There are reasons why the monies could not flow. The next slide, please. National Health Insurance, Chair, out of the allocation of the 268 million rands, 264 million was expended, and there's 4.3 million rands not spent. However, those will not be requested for rollovers, and this is mainly due to the effect that COVID had and our inability to drew some doctors for the GP program. Next slide, please. Health Facility Revitalization Grant, Chair. Here is where we do have the challenges in terms of availability of some of the commodities in the infrastructure industry. However, despite those challenges, out of the total budget of 6.8 billion rands available, 6.2 billion rands was expended. There's a 652 million rands still available, and the affected provinces did indicate that they will request rollover funds to ensure that they can honor those obligations with regard to already existing contracts awarded. Next slide, please. The statutory HR and training grant, Chair, once again, out of the total budget of 4.3 billion rands, 4.2 billion rands was expended, to 54 million rands and the funds still available, which will also be requested for rollover funds. In some provinces, there were some over-expenditure in KZN, for example. Those funds will be coming from the provincial equitable share to ensure that those over-expenditures are cleared. Overall, Chair, 98.8% excellent performance for this grant. Next slide, please. Chair, our big grant sitting for HIV, TB, malaria, HPV, and community outreach services, sitting at the budget available, 27.8 billion rands. Total expenditure of 26.6 billion rands, 1.1 billion rands still available. Those affected provinces will ask for the rollover funds. Once again, COVID had its impact on it, but apart from that, some of the programs and projects that we had planned could not fully implement it due to the challenges and restrictions we had. However, the provinces will ask for rollover funds to ensure that those projects and programs do not fall behind and that we are not being penalized with budget cuts in this year and have to fund the expenditures of last year or the previous financial year from this year's budget allocation, Chair. Next slide. Chair, this is just to demonstrate the rollover funds which were requested at provincial level for the various grants and by the various provinces. Like I've indicated, the very same will happen to this year's 2.6 billion rand, where the provinces will ask for rollover funds, and then those funds will be ultimately added to this year's budget allocation to ensure that we can sustain the expenditures for the commitments that we've already incurred. The next slide will be in the indirect grants. I've just completed the direct grants, Chair. The indirect grants is allocated at the national department, and some of these grants are also reflected in the department's programs and expenditures, which I went through earlier on. And we have already alluded to some of the reasons why there were some underspendings. So out of the total budget available, we had an adjusted budget, original budget of 2.1 billion rands that was adjusted during the adjustments budget to 1.5 billion rands. A total expenditure of 1.3 billion rands materialized in the past financial year. In this instance, we also indicated what amounts of commitments are sitting against the 1.5 billion rands, and that leaves us with a total budget unspent of 190 million rands. So in this instance, we decided to bring in the commitment, seeing that we do have that information. So in this instance, we will also ask for the commitments of 248 million rands to be rolled over. Some of the expenditures, like I've indicated, we had some challenges with our logo system, which went offline just before year end, and that was due to interconnectivity with FITA. Nowadays, we rely heavily on internet connections to ensure that our systems can function optimally, especially in the transversal system environment. This is the BAS, the logos, and the PASOL systems. Chair, and we can move on to the next slide. The indirect grant, Chair, I think I've alluded to this. We can move to the next slide. Chair, the audit outcomes, I think it's just important to share with honorable members the view of the sector. For the sector, we obtained 3 unqualified audit opinions from Gauteng, Mpumalanga, and North West. And then Western Cape sustained a clean audit. We had a big NHC recently, and we did discuss the reasons why other provinces could not achieve also unqualified audits. It sounds as if there is some inconsistencies during audits, especially on certain activities. And there was an agreement that we as a health sector will have to review some of our policies, especially the accounting policies and the treatment, for example, on contingent liabilities. We need to come up with a uniform policy so that we can be treated equally all of the provinces, and that might address the reason, or that might address some of the concerns raised by the Auditor General, and that might also yield the result that more provinces will get an unqualified audit. Next slide, please. So, Chair, this is just for the National Department of Health then. For the past 10 years, there was an unqualified audit, and unfortunately this year, due to the accrued departmental revenue coming from the COVID-19 vaccination program and the reimbursement and recoupment process, there was a qualified audit opinion expressed. Next slide, please. The audit, qualified audit opinion, Chair, I think it's just important to share with members. So the Auditor General said that the qualification error relates to a limitation in finding, in accrued departmental revenue relating to the recoupment of the COVID-19 vaccine. The systems implemented by management was not always adequate to ensure that all transactions and events were accurately recorded in the financial statements. Chair, Minister, the Minister did indicate some of the challenges, especially when it comes to the insured population. Some of those members can become uninsured during the claiming process, and this is exactly what happened. The National Department of Health did implement a system to ensure that all transactions and amounts are recorded and are available in the accounting records. National Department of Health did have adequate systems of internal control for the recording of all transactions and events. The accounting records were available and were provided to the audit team for auditing. The NDOH did reconcile all of the transactions, Chair, and the events to the financial statements. And the only issue that there was a difference of opinion between the department and the audit team was on what the appropriate treatment was in respect of claims that were rejected subsequently to the medical aid fund. What happened, Chair, is at the time when we compiled the financial statements, we had confirmation and validation from the EVDA system through their processes that all of those persons that we will be claiming from the medical aid were indeed insured and their medical status were in good standing. Subsequent to submission of claims during the month of July and August, some of those claims were rejected by the medical aid, and some of the reasons was that the person is no longer insured or it doesn't have medical cover any longer. Those were queried, and the explanation given was that if a person falls in arrear with their medical aid contributions, they are given grace to catch up, and if they catch up with their arrears, then the medical aid status is restored and the claim will be honored. In some of these instances, those members of the public did not honor the good standing of the medical aid, and therefore they has been removed from the medical aid status. And this is where the department then were found that in our accrued departmental revenue, we included claims which were subsequently rejected, and therefore the Auditor General is of the view that there is some chance for a department of getting that money, and that means then that we have overstated our accrued departmental revenue. The department did identify the amount, however, due to the time limits of the audit and the requirements to conclude the audit as per requirement of the PFMA, we could not engage further on this. However, we will ensure that there is no such a repeat in the new financial year, Chair. Next slide, please. Chair, very briefly, I think it's also important just to share with honorable members some of the aspects that was raised in the audit report, just to give some context to it. There is a point of material misstatements in the financial statements. Chair, those things will happen. During the audit, usually audit teams identify some transactions which they want to be treated differently than what the department treated those transactions. And that will result in some amendments to the amounts that we have included in the financial statements. But be more specific, they've raised the one on capital work in progress, 61 million rands. In this instance, Chair, the department and the audit team disagree about the treatment of feasibility fees and research expenditure on capital projects. There is a different meaning in the accounting world for feasibility fees and research expenditure compared to what that meaning is in the infrastructure world. So this matter was then referred to the Office of the Accountant General at National Treasury, who confirmed that indeed the department treated these transactions and expenditures correctly. The Auditor General, however, was of the view that their opinion is correct, and they referred it the case or the audit finding to their technical unit for a review and an opinion. We were then informed, without presenting with the presented with the documentation, that the technical unit sustained the view of the Auditor General, and therefore, to avoid the further qualification, we, as the department, then agreed to pass an adjustment to address this matter, and that relates to a prior year adjustment that we had to process on the financial statements. We did agree with the Auditor General that this matter will be addressed during this upcoming audit so that we can finalize this, because we as a department felt that we were treated a bit unfairly, in the sense that for all of these years, this transaction was handled in this manner and fashion, and then all of a sudden there's a change. But we will deal with that in the upcoming audit, Chair. The accruals, it also relates to the vaccination program and the provisions that we had to make for that. This is 363 million rands, where the administrative fees that we have to pay to private service providers for uninsured patients vaccinated at their facilities, and that is the 80 rands 50 admin fee. We received those claims subsequent to year end. We did the calculation, and we had to bring this also into the financial statement to have a proper disclosure so that we can know exactly what are the accruals that we still have to pay for the administrative fees, Chair. Contingent assets, the Auditor General also calculated on their side what is the value of those vaccines already distributed to the private facilities. And they arrived at a figure of 123 million rands as the value of those vaccines distributed. And we had to bring that also into the financial statements and disclose it as a contingent asset for a department, seeing that it has not been administered yet by the private facilities. Next slide, please. Events of the reporting day, Chair, there is a 673,000 adjustment that we had to make, and that was due to a DBSA commitment value for a contract that was advertised before year end. However, the documentation from the supplier to conclude the award was only received after year end. And then for KUKA, professional fees contract were increased on the commitments register due to the construction value for a project increasing. However, this was not formally communicated to the service provider due to various contracting requirements. Chair, just on this one, I've very briefly explained that we receive information also from outside our financial system, and this is the classical case. DBSA and KUKA is running their own financial systems, and they are supplying us with information that we can include in our financial statements. In this instance, the Auditor General, when auditing DBSA and KUKA, they have identified these two items which were not correctly disclosed to the department. Hence, we had to make an adjustment to our financial statements. The irregular expenditure of 61.4 million rands, Chair, this was identified by the Auditor General as potential irregular expenditure. And in the previous financial set of financial statements, the 2020-21 financial year, this 61 million rand was identified as cases under investigation. However, due to the challenges of COVID and the relocation of the building, and in this instance, we could not commence with the investigation to confirm whether these are indeed irregular expenditure. In two cases, we did refer the correspondence to National Treasury. We are awaiting their feedback to confirm whether this is indeed irregular expenditure. But Chair, reality is we could not commence with this because some of the documentation that we required to do the investigations were in transit between the two buildings. And when we relocated to this building, it took some time just to get those documentations by the relevant units unpacked and in such a state that we can use those documentation. However, this is being attended to at the present moment and it will be addressed in this financial year still. The prior period error, Chair, 210 million rand, that was omitted from the 2020-21 financial statements. That was payables in respect of our Cuban students, the Cuban program. That was also identified by the auditors and we had to bring that in. I'm not sure why it was not identified in the previous financial year. And then on inventory, Chair, there was a 7.6 million rand, a duplication of the 7.6 million rand. There was a drafting error of the financial statements because two units supplied the very same information. The one was coming from our supply chain unit and the other was coming from the stock control tower, which is outside the systems of the department. So both supplied the same information and unfortunately it was duplicated and we had to remove the one set to get the actual value for the vaccines. And this is related to the vaccines at hand at the 31st of March. The next slide, please. Chair, I think it's just important also to raise the irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. I've pointed out the 61.4 million rands for the previous financial year, which was now included and recognized in our financial statements because the rule is that if you have not concluded those before year end, you need to recognize it as fruitless and irregular expenditure, my apology, which we did. So those are the eight cases and the reasons for that is irregularity is due to non-compliance with supply chain prescripts, payments towards expired contracts, and then the non-verification of tax compliance, and that is sitting in our infrastructure environment. Chair, but then also the statement is made that nothing was done on fruitless and wasteful expenditure, which is not 100% accurate because during the reporting period, we were in a position to deal with five cases for fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Those were investigated and concluded. Like I've indicated, some of the challenges is to retrieve some of the documents due to the relocation, but we are now fairly stable and we have now access to all of our documentation, hence we could at least deal with five of these cases. Chair, and then there were no new fruitless and wasteful expenditure cases for the 21-22 financial year. And that will mean that we will be in a position to deal with those outstanding balance of 1.5 million rands for fruitless and wasteful in the current financial year. Next slide, please. Consequence management, Chair, I'm not going to repeat. It is true that in some instances, and the department do acknowledge that investigations were delayed due to COVID-19 and the relocation of the offices. I've explained that we need documentation to do the investigation and to confirm that what was the actual transgression before we can take any disciplinary action against the person. We don't want to get any litigation against the department for unfair treatment, etc. So that is a fact, Chair, and like I've said, the department is in the process of dealing with those, and those will be finalized by year end. Next slide, please. Chair, just very briefly again, there is also in the audit report a mentioning of supply chain non-compliance, and that relates to the 30 days payment. During the reporting period, Chair, we did process 8,408 invoices to the value of 7.8 billion rands through the logo system. And of this, 1,623 invoices with a total value of 158 million rands were paid after 30 days. In total, 80.6% of the invoices were paid within 30 days. Chair, not to come up with an excuse, but it was extremely difficult. The finance staff, together with the supply chain and the HR staff on the logo, on the parcel system, we had to work at three different premises to process financial transactions until we relocated to this building late last year, and then we had some stability in our transversal systems, but also a stability in terms of office accommodation for staff to work from a fixed office instead of using their colleagues' computers to process transactions. Then likewise with the asset management, Chair, there is a fact that the department did not consult the education sector when we disposed of the computer equipment, Chair. The main reason for that, and that is omission and oversight. We will ensure that that will not happen again. But the asset management unit was of the view that seeing that the computers to be disposed was unusable because there was water damage from the previous Civitas building, hence they thought it's not necessary to consult the education department. The CFO did make it clear that irrespective whether it's usable or unusable, we still need to consult, and they need to indicate whether they are interested or not. So Chair, that was our mission. We acknowledge that, and we will ensure that that will not happen again. We've put a process in place to avoid that. Next slide, please. Chair, quality of financial statements, that is also lifted out in the audit report to say that there's no oversight on the financial statements. The quality of the financial statements is not up to standard. Chair, I've indicated that we have put processes in place. However, it needs to be reminded and remembered that all of the inputs into the financial statements is not generated by the finance unit. We are relying on inputs from cost centers within the department, and like in the instances of DBSA and KUGA, and then also now with the vaccination program, that information is coming from systems outside the financial system of the department. So the process that we have applied, Chair, is that we are capturing all of the information on the financial statement, and we return that to the end users or to the colleagues who provided the input, and they need to confirm to us that indeed that the information is captured correctly on the financial statements. This year, we will go a step further, Chair. We will improve on that confirmation to ensure that there is accountability and responsibility for those who are certifying and providing the inputs, because it is really damaging to the department if there's a perception that we are not reviewing our financial statements for accuracy before it's submitted. Chair, a point that I did not mention here, which is also acknowledged by the Auditor General, is that even the financial statements before it's submitted to the AGSA is also going through a review process by our internal audit unit, and there's also a report generated by the internal audit unit on the review of the financial statements before it's submitted to the Auditor General for auditing. And then, Chair, all financial transactions are recorded in the financial system, so the Auditor General couldn't find that we didn't record any financial, we omitted to record financial transactions, and all of that is supported with verifiable source documents. And then also all financial transactions are reconciled on a daily basis and a monthly basis as required by the PFMA and Treasury regulations monthly, Chair. Next slide, please. Next slide. Chair, just then to conclude, we as a department will improve on those that we have identified some shortcomings. So we will ensure that there's proper record keeping in the sense of the qualification that we received from the COVID-19 vaccination program on the reimbursement. And the record keeping that we are referring there to is basically on the rejection of the claims and the treatment of those rejections. How do we disclose that and treat that in the financial statements? Processing and reconciliation controls daily, monthly, weekly, we will ensure that those is sustained and if there is a requirement for any further improvements and we identify any risk there, we will address that. Also, likewise, the regular accurate and complete financial and performance reporting, the compliance monitoring, we will ensure that we do comply with what is required by the legislation, and here the asset management is an example where we have omitted to follow it by the letter of the word. The next steps required, Chair, is we will develop and implement the audit action plan. There will be quarterly reportings on the identified findings as indicated in the audit management report. The national department will provide oversight role on the implementation of the audit improvement plan and reporting. And then we will review once again our internal control system. We have a very strong, good internal control system, Chair and honorable members. However, it is always there to review and to ensure that that's still applicable and up to date. So we are also busy with that process, Chair. Next slide, please. I think that's the end. Thank you very much, Chair. If I can hand back to you and to the DG. Thank you for the time.
Thank you very much, Andre. I will hand over to my minister. Thank you.
Thank you, DG and the team. Sorry for taking much longer than you allocated, Chairperson. I think we lost a bit of time during the issues of the computers. I think that my concluding remarks is to say that as we said in our introduction, that we went through quite a difficult period, both generally within the environment as the custodians of saving lives during the heights of the pandemic, and also rolling out the vaccination, having to compromise a number of other functions and services to deal with that during this particular financial year, compounded by own situations in terms of headquarters relocation and all those factors. What we can say is that we believe that both adverse effects in terms of the pandemic, we believe that the stability will continue. All projections are suggesting that we are in this endemic phase, and despite some red flags here and there, that the virus will still remain for some time, but more at the endemic. So we're able to get back to all our functions and focus improvement. In terms of the administrative issues, we believe that also those are hopefully behind us, both at the political and the managerial level. As DG has indicated, the CFO is now appointed. It took some time due to some of the procedures, but now we have a substantive CFO, and other senior managers have also been appointed. There are a few which we are still filling up. The office is now working, stabilized. Everybody has moved into the new building. The strikes which were there from various labor unions, fights over the unsafety of Civitas building is also behind us. We have a process of integrating all staff. So we're looking forward to a much more stable environment. Over to you. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Minister, DG and the team. We appreciate this presentation. there are quite a number of members who want to engage with this presentation, so I'm going to mention them in order. It's Honourable Members Clark, let me start again. Gela, Ismail, Van Staden, Tembakwayo, Chirwa, Wilson, Clark, Munyai. Honourable Members Clark, Ismail, Van Staden, Tembakwayo, Chirwa, Wilson, Clark, Munyai. In that order, Honourable Members, we will take some input from yourselves. Thank you.
Chairperson, I think the first time you read it was different to the second time. I think it's Honourable Gela first.
Yes, I said Gela first. Gela, Ismail, Van Staden, Tembakwayo, Chirwa, Wilson, Clark, Munyai. Thank you, Honourable Gela, please start.
Yes, thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me welcome the report, a comprehensive report from the Minister and also the Department of Health. Chen, I'm having a few questions that I want to raise in this report. Firstly, Chen, my apology for that. Chairperson. Firstly, Chair, the report on the audit report, Chairperson, as we note that the Department of Health received a qualified audit opinion because of different reasons, some of them. I think, Minister, at one stage you came to us as a portfolio committee and you briefed us about what is happening in the department. And also today, the acting CFO also highlighted the reasons why we got a qualified report from the AG, particular on understanding and also this irregular expenditure of such a huge amount. And what I want to know, Minister, what steps has the leadership taken to rectify this in future? As you know that next year we'll be also getting reports from the department. And what consequence management steps have been taken to address the irregular expenditure that has been identified? I think it's high time, Minister, that at least because when things are not done correctly, somebody that will be blamed. It's that minister in that department. But of course, we understand that you have a team that is working with you. And this team at the stage, at some point, they are failing you. So I think it's high time that at least you act, Minister, regarding this. Of course, we know that at some time, there was no a CFO, it was acting CFO after acting CFO, and there were a lot of things that were happening in the department. But now that at least finally, I must appreciate and also congratulate the new CFO that has been appointed. Maybe this irregular expenditure will end, and coming to the next financial year, we'll get a better result from what we had just now. And then coming to another issue that I want to raise is the issue of what steps are being taken to improve data. And the other one is the issue on human resources. How is the department addressing the vacancy rate of 16.9 against a target that you have put yourself into, the target of 10%? The other question, how are officials being held accountable for not achieving the target? Coming to the program of NHI, which is something that we are looking forward to as a country to implement, and it's a good move looking to the issue that the department is struggling with, and also to look to other countries that it's working the issue of universal coverage. My question on program two, as we are towards to implement NHI, and we have already started with engagements, and the people of South Africa have said mouthfully that they want NHI minister as yesterday. If we can just speed up the issue of implementing it. But my question today for that is that, how is the department implementing lessons identified in the NHI evaluation report? Then the other issue on this one also, what is the progress made with the rollout of a health patient registration system? Is it linked with the Department of Home Affairs, so that at least you also get information in Home Affairs? On program three, which is communicable and non-communicable disease, the issue here is also frustrating. We must not put blame or why it was not implemented because of a COVID. But I think, Minister, it's some of a laziness of some officials who are tasked to make sure that they implement some of the programs relating to these programs. My question, actually, where I want to go is that we also understand in program three, which is not right and it's not good. But also the question that I want to pose is that what has been done to improve the performance of a program three, because we know program three is something that related to the core function of the health department, especially on TB, HIV and AIDS. You know, those things are very key, and really we've got that target of 90. So if we are lacking, I think it's something that it's not reflecting good, but I hope that it will be addressed very soon, and we need improvement and update on this program three. And also, what is the update on the mental health strategic framework, and how is the department addressing the high level of teenage pregnancy in the country? That's why I'm saying this program, it's very key, program three, minister. So if we can also get a response, and also a strategy, or how are you a plan that, how are you going to address all these challenges in the program three, especially that we know actually what is happening in the country. The other issue is that I want to understand, or a clarity, does the department have a plan in place to potentially deal with the outbreaks of other diseases such as monkeypox and a new strain of Ebola? I know that Minister Yuen came also to us and briefed us about the monkeypox as a department. On program four, primary health care, What is the department playing in the fight against GBV, the role? And also, we know that GBV is something that it's a pandemic on its own, and it's something that it's happening across the country. Every day we hear GBV that it's happening in the country. And what is the department actually it's doing? What is your role in GBV? Coming to the issue of Ideal Clinic, I think the DG has also alluded to, but also what is the plan to make sure that at least we improve the standard? We must not drop the standard because really we have seen Ideal Clinic in various areas where it's been implemented that it's working, and it's a good idea for our clinics. So what is the plan to make sure that at least you don't drop the standard, but also there is a improvement? But safe to say, Minister, we welcome the report. We understand the frustration and the challenges that you have found in the department, as I know that there was a minister before and also acting minister. Now you were assigned to carry on with the mandate of health. That will be all from me. We really support you, and we are looking forward to make sure that we address all the challenges that the health department is facing. We have already received presentation from other entities, and we are looking forward. And I must also say, Minister, we appreciate and we welcome and also congratulate SAPRA for getting ML3. Really, it's the achievement. There are a lot of achievement in the Department of Health that we really welcome as portfolio committee. Thank you very much. Keep it up, the good work. I know it's too much. There are a lot of things that are happening. It was a COVID. Now it's something else that we are monkeypox and something that are coming. But I have a confidence on you that really will take this country forward and also the health system forward. Thank you very much, Chair.
Good afternoon, Chair. Good afternoon, colleagues. Good afternoon to the Minister and your team. Now, the HU report stated that the National Department of Health actually regressed in the current year and received a qualified opinion. The AG further highlighted that annual financial statements also contained material misstatements that could have been prevented if adequate reviews of the financial statements and supporting documents had taken place before submissions to audit. The AG further highlighted that there seemed to be no accountability in the department regarding consequence management. So I know in your presentation you touched on a few things that you are going to be doing, but ultimately, Minister and your team, kindly advise what consequence management is going to be implemented by the department to address the issues raised by the AG. I think as a committee, you know, we need some constructive replies by not saying, you know, I'm going to be doing that. We need more time frames. We need something constructive as a feedback to be able to say something constructive is going to be happening to actually address these issues. Now, apart from the sanctions, you know, imposed on officials implicated in the SIU investigations on the Digital Vibe scandal or the Digital Vibe case post-year-end, you know, there are no real consequences for transgressors as the department does not have clearly set out roles and responsibilities for the consequent management process. And I'm coming back to it because this is where I feel the department is severely lacking. So if the Minister and his team could please advise and provide a full report on any investigations on several instances of irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, as well as financial misconduct. And if nothing has been done, please advise what are you going to do to change things to eliminate irregular expenditure and fruitless and wasteful expenditure in the department. And I think we need more constructive replies with regard to this. My third point is that, again, when it comes to irregular expenditure, it's actually very, very high. It's very, very concerning. Now, you know, by blaming COVID and so forth, really, we have a health department to run. When COVID comes or any other, God forbid, any other pandemic comes, we cannot have a store in the provision of healthcare to the country. So really, we need some constructive action steps from the department to be able to say, what are the reasons for irregular expenditure and how is the responsible officials actually being held to account for this? Because somebody needs to take responsibility for work that is not done in the department. With regard to accruals, you know, these are actually, you know, what is the department going to do to address the accruals, which is obviously, you know, a huge issue in the health sector. And these need to be addressed so that we can lead, or at least going, we can move towards a functioning system. Now, the AG noted material findings on performance information, and the data reported by the department is not of standard and may not be reliable nor accurate. Now, really, we need to know how the department is going to effectively address this issue and by when will this be fully resolved. So we want timeframes to be able to say, this is an issue by telling us you're going to attend to it. It's not telling us anything. We need something constructive to be able to say this will be fully addressed at this time and resolved by these time. Reality, what I'm saying here is that officials need to be held to account where targets are not achieved and consequence management needs to be implemented on this. When it comes to, you know, provincial departments, I note that the target related to provincial departments has actually been removed. But the reality is that we know that the Northwest Provincial Department was put under administration. And there are so many issues actually raised with regard to service delivery provided by other provinces. This is a very important target, and how our province is going to improve on the audit outcomes is something that, you know, we need answers for. We've had a catastrophe after catastrophe in Gauteng, you know, when you're looking at the health department, and you can't, I don't understand how this item can actually be removed from there, because these are answers that we need. Again, I'm going to say, you know, officials, how officials held accountable where targets are not achieved and what consequence management is going to be implemented. Now, we also need to know how the department is going to reduce and prevent medical legal claims going forward. Now, we also need to get an understanding from the department or a report on legal firms and individuals that actually instituted allegedly fraudulent claims. Have those department, health department officials who assisted with these fraudulent claims been charged as yet? If not, we want to know why not. And, you know, maybe you can give us a full report on this so we can better understand it. Then again, the vacancy rate. You know, we know that a high vacancy rate, not only in the Department of Health, but when you're looking at the entities, the OHSC, the Health Ombuds Office, although they're trying to do their best, the reality is there are vacancies and these need to be filled so that we can ensure that we have effective service delivery on the ground. Please, you know, if you could provide a report on the restructuring process. And at the same time, maybe give us a report back on interns and comm service doctors that the department has hired. You know, if we could get a breakdown and tell us exactly when were they actually included into the system and how many are still waiting and how are these issues actually going to be resolved going into the future. I think when it comes to ideal clinics, the FFC has highlighted that the number of primary healthcare facilities that qualify as ideal clinics per year is declining, from 1,906 in the 2019-2022 to 1,444 in the 2020-2021. Now, this is the main concern, as clinics are the first point of entry for healthcare for patients. While you are replying on this one, Minister, with your team, maybe you could give us an understanding, which I've asked the entities as well. The reality is that a clinic is now passed as the ideal clinic. But when you go and do an oversight there, that clinic is actually short-staffed. That clinic has a shortage of space. Obviously, they're suffering with load shedding as well, the impact of load shedding. And I mean, I really don't understand how these numbers actually are achieved or not achieved when you're looking at the realities on the ground. My last 2 points is that please can you appraise the committee with an update on the appeal process by the two appellants, you know, on the Tembisa Provincial Tertiary Hospital investigation report. And lastly, on the Tembisa report, can your office or can the minister and his team please share with the committee the progress made in implementing the health ombuds recommendations by the Gauteng Department of Health and the hospital. I think this is very important for us to know. We've just been synced at the social media, reading this article and that article. We need some first-hand replies. And my last question, which is something that I've been asking over and over again, with regard to the Nelson Mandela Fidel Castro Collaboration Program, the last time I asked the question to the minister, the official replies I received was that the matter is being dealt with by the SIU. When I asked my colleagues in the provincial department to ask, I've been told that the audit report was now taken over by the Premier's office and there's an internal provincial investigation. And the response was, ready by September. Maybe, Minister, if you can give us a guideline on what's happening, because obviously there's major allegations of corruption, also allegations of files that have suddenly gone missing. So thank you. Thank you, Minister, and your team, if you could assist.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Good afternoon to the Minister, the DG, the Deputy DG, the officials, Chairperson of this committee, and members of this committee. After our engagement as committee with the AG this past week and several entities, there's some problematic areas which stands out for me, which I need to get answers here from the Minister or the Audit Department. The Auditor General reported us during this week that at present there are 15,000 claims and medical legal claims lodged against the department, amounting to a total value of 125 billion rand. Now, this exceptionally high number of claims is understandable considering the terrible state of the public healthcare sector. I want to know, will this committee be provided with a comprehensive report on all the legal claims against the Department of Health? And if not, why not? And it is of the utmost importance that this report must detail what each of the claims entails, as well as what the reasons or the causes are. I mean, the money we are currently spending on paying out medical legal claims could rather have been spent on upgrading the infrastructure, the building of new hospitals, the procurement of critical medical equipment and medicine, and the filling of critical positions like the positions of doctors and nurses. On the Office of the Health Standard Compliance, the budget to this entity is clearly not sufficient. The OHSC reported us this week that they require more funding from the national fiscus, and they also report that their current funding and staff is insufficient. Now in 2019, if you can remember, Honourable Minister, they had 44 inspectors, and at the current moment, they only have 42 to perform inspections at all hospitals and clinics across the country. Now that is very worrying. I want to know what measures will be put in place to ensure that the OHSC can fulfill its obligations as prescribed. And on the Health Ombudsman, it's also clear that there's also a big problem regarding the number of staff. The Ombudsman stated that the UK office consists of 450 staff members. Here in South Africa, he got only 3 investigators and 1 manager. So this office also needs several millions of rands to be able to perform its duties. My question on this problem also is, what measures will be put in place, to ensure that the Health Ombudsman can fulfill its duties and obligations as prescribed? On the irregular expenditure, I'm a bit confused now. I thought the irregular expenditure of this department was an amount of 1.3 billion, but now today you see a figure of 61.4 million. If that can just be clarified for me, please. But on that, I want to know what measures are currently in place to get rid of corruption, mismanagement, and maladministration in this department, because it's clear that the measures that is currently in place is not sufficient. So I think a new and improved plans must be looked at to finally get rid of corruption, mismanagement, and maladministration. And how will these new and improved plans be implemented and by when? And as the previous member before me has asked, who's taking the responsibility? We need to know who's responsible for this. On a matter which is in the news the past week, or more than the past week, about Medipos, the Council for Medical Schemes, in my opinion, did not act sufficiently to intervene in the Medipos situation, which has currently serious consequences for Medipos members. I want to know, will the minister and the department intervene in this matter together with a relevant minister and department? And what measures will be put in place to ensure that the South African Post Office will in future be able to pay the medical aid fund account, as the 700 million remains a big problem for this state institution? And I want to request a comprehensive report on all medical aid funds that are at the risk of collapsing, that must be provided to this committee. I think we must address the elephant that is in this meeting this afternoon in this room of us. I think it's a fact that mismanagement, maladministration, and corruption have totally destroyed the once effective public healthcare system. And it will not end, and it cannot be turned around with the NHI. I think we must be frank with each other about that. I think a public healthcare system must first be restored completely before the NHI board can even be considered or deliberated on any further. And even the health ombudsman said to us this past week that the department will not be able to implement the NHI. Even if you go and look what happened, what was reported in the United Kingdom yesterday, that the NHS waiting list is currently 7 million. It was also reported in the UK that the new data from the NHS in England shows that 7 million people waiting to start routine hospital treatment at the end of August. Now, this is up from 6.8 million in July this year, and the highest number since records began in August 2007. Now, even in a first world country, this system is a huge problem. What is currently unfolding in our public health system is a shining of the example of how hospitals will function if a national health insurance is placed on the statute books. And therefore, I want to call on the Minister of Health to withdraw this bill at once, and that this bill should only come under review again once all the shortcomings in state hospitals have been addressed. I mean, the NHI is simply not an option at this stage amid the crisis currently affecting our public healthcare system. And lastly, Chairperson, on the backlog of medical procedures, we have dealt on this matter in a previous meeting with the minister. I just want to know, will the department or the minister provide this committee with workable plans and solutions to solve this crisis? Not the previous answer minister gave to me from the provinces, but was not adequate plans they had there. And on the cancellation of operations, which we also, I sent a message to the minister last Thursday night and the deputy GG about this matter. And thank you, deputy GG, for coming back to me, providing me an answer on this matter. I want to know, can the department or the minister, and the minister actually gave us an update regarding this matter? And how long will it take to solve this problem? Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Minister.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you, the department, for the presentation. Under the disclaimed opinion, as per AG's report, and in addition to challenges as those with qualified opinion, they could not provide AG with evidence for most of the amounts and disclosures reported in the financial statements. And the AG was unable to conclude or express an opinion on the credibility of the financial statements. Further, under the qualified opinion, same challenges as those with unqualified opinion findings, but in addition, they could not produce credible and reliable financial statements. They had material misstatements on specific areas in their financial statements, which could not be corrected before the financial statements were published. In the four-year audit outcome, the CMS, the NHLS and the SAFRA had 43% of unqualified with findings, wherein they struggled, amongst others, to align performance report to predetermined objectives that committed to in the APPS, to set clear performance indicators and targets to measure that performance against the predetermined objectives, to report reliably on whether they achieve their performance targets.
what would your urgent intervention be to make sure that such struggles are not experienced, Minister? Pertaining to qualified with findings, your department is also mentioned, whereupon the fact that you had additions such as the failure to produce credible and reliable financial statements and had material misstatements on specific areas in the financial statements which could not be corrected before the financial statements are published. If the NDOH cannot produce reliable financial statement, what is the consequence management in place to root out these problems? Or what have you done to those that failed to adhere to producing credible and reliable financial statements? The AG further noted during the period under review that three persons occupied the CFO position with two acting capacity through, though the position has recently been filled according to the AG. Please explain to us what was happening here, as this practice had dire financial implications. Why did it happen in your department? There seems to be no accountability in the department regarding consequence management, and this trend is running through some entities like SAPRA and CMS. Can you take us through concrete, not the mere reasons that you are presenting or you have presented today, something that we can accept, the concrete consequence management that is in place in your department, and why is it not adhered to? Were there any investigations done on several instances of irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure, as well as financial misconduct? AJ reported that there were no such performed or reported during the period under review. Why, Minister? AJ, like some of us in the committee, have mentioned that NHI fund purchasing health services is not adequately addressed to ensure accurate reporting. Can you please define the process to ensure that the deficiencies are not there or they are corrected? The AG also supports some of us pertaining to possible amendments to NHI, in that the AG's key impacts of misstatements, in that the department needs to track the number of hearings they attended to ensure all inputs in the NHI bills that they are taken into consideration when finalizing the bill. As the process is unfolding in the committee, none of the inputs of the committee members, excluding those from the ANC members, are not taken into consideration. What about the public's considerations? Are they thrown into the dustbin as well? Can the minister account extensively on this matter? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Greetings to all the colleagues and greetings to the minister and the NDOH. These are my questions to the minister. I just want to ask on the issue of CMS. We spoke to them Izolo or the day before yesterday, if I'm not mistaken, on the Medical Aid Schemes Act and the fact that their jurisdiction, according to the Medical Aid Schemes Act, is only limited to them regulating medical aid, and yet they are the overseer of or regulating as well medical insurance or the low-cost benefit option, as we may know. And I problematized this for a long time now with different reasons. I think the minister will recall as well. But I really just want to get an idea from the minister or what the position of the NDOH is on why there hasn't been a transfer of the medical insurance into the right entity that deals with insurance and stuff like that, especially because most of these insurances deal with claims, for instance, hospital stay and stuff like that, and not necessarily for surgeries and getting, you know, the basic healthcare stuff being done, except for GP visits. So that's the first question. And secondly, this is about SAPRA and Pfizer. SAPRA approved Pfizer, and as part of those conditions, it was that the information that Pfizer submits proved its safety. However, there was a leaked document, I think we'll remember, because this is an issue that happened a long time ago, of over 1,000 pages stating possible adverse effects that Pfizer vaccines also has. This information was not known to SAPRA prior to this information being leaked out. This, however, did not raise safety issues with SAPRA, did not prompt SAPRA to investigate, despite the fact that they approve based on the submissions that they get from vaccines. I want to know how this is not problematic, if the decision to approve Pfizer was done with incomplete information, and yet incomplete information on safety was utilized to deny approval of other vaccines. And second to that, Pfizer has now applied for dilution of the current Comirnaty vaccine to be used in children. Does this mean this is the very vaccine that will be given to children, noting the history of Pfizer and submitting incomplete and misleading information? When does our government practice its autonomy and prioritize the safety of our people, the safety of our children, especially taking cognizance of the over 6,000 reported adverse effects, which won't be investigated fully, knowing the capacity and the laziness and the situation in our departments and the entities as well, right? And secondly, there was a member who spoke about GBV and the response of the department, and I think it's a very important question as well. I share the sentiments, more especially because if there's two similarities between the SAPS and the health department, it's that they will tend back people, especially GBV victims. An example is Uzenizo Levena, who was gang raped, taken to a clinic in the Eastern Cape. Then she was turned back, right? And the Eastern Cape Department of Health came back rebutting those allegations, as you always do. And obviously this holds more water because the GBV instance, there's less sympathy, there's less empathy. We've never seen, the National Department of Health speaking on this particular issue. I really just want to ask, what has the minister done about this particular thing? Because it's one of the most gruesome things that have ever happened in the country. Yes, thousands of people died, but the fact that a teenage old girl was turned back at a clinic after being raped, went to a police station, turned back again, sent back to the clinic, but she died. She died because nimtsikisile. And even in that instance, there's an insistence that she was turned to the police station because she was stable, despite the fact that there's so many regulations and things that can be done to accommodate GBV victims. So I really want to find out what the minister has done about this particular case and just holistically in dealing with this kind of thing. I know it won't be groundbreaking response because the department doesn't have a history of prioritizing GBV victims in this country. And another question is, I really want to know what is going to happen to the healthcare facilities that do not reach the standards required by the NHI, right? Because there's parts in the NHI bill that stipulate that the certain standards have to be achieved first by healthcare facilities before they have an agreement with the NHI and all of those. What's going to happen if those standards required are not reached by those healthcare facilities, especially noting that even the bodies that are supposed to check on these standards are not capacitated enough to do this work, even in the coming 2 years, on the current healthcare facilities that exist, including private healthcare facilities. The issue of the NHI really is a stamp on the fact that the era of President Ramaphosa is the era of strengthening the private sector. We see it with ESCOM, we see it with the SAA, we see it with many SOEs, and now we see it with the public sector of healthcare, which is now the money that's supposed to be better in the healthcare system is being plunged into the private sector through a new colonial bill such as the NHI. The AG report shows that all entities, and especially the NGOH, keep regressing. This means the department was ran and performed better under the former minister, Zwelin Mkhize, than it is under the current minister, Joe Phahla. What is the reason for this? Since you can no longer blame COVID for the current year, there are less IVU clinics under the leadership of Minister Joe Phahla than there were under the leadership of Minister Mkhize, who was a minister at the height of COVID pandemic.
There's more mismanagement now of funds. There's more irregular expenditure. There's more wasteful expenditure, which is truly, in essence, corruption and theft under the leadership of Mr. Joe Phahla than there was during the former minister who was removed due to alleged corruption. Tembisa Hospital being an example. Dealing with corruption, I think it is more evident than ever, is not a priority of the minister. We've never seen you, do a drive on ridding the Department of Corruption, do a drive or whatever, a program specifically specialized to deal with uprooting the issue of corruption. Because Zonke, this is one of wasteful expenditure, regular expenditure, noting what we have seen with so many hospitals, with the death of some of the people that have spoken against the crime that's happening in your department. These are crimes that are happening. It's cash heists that are happening under your leadership, and they've become worse now that you are minister. Access to quality healthcare has decreased for thousands of people. This is a constant regression, and that warrants that the current minister is actually failing in improving our healthcare system, and is in fact, it's getting worse under your leadership, Mr. Joe Phahla. Is the minister proud of this result of the worsening Department of Health under your leadership? How do you feel that it's getting worse under your leadership, or that the Department of Health is at its worst with you as the minister at the helm? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Member Wilson has asked me to go in her place because she's got a bloody nose that she needs to sort out. And I'll go through the following questions in terms of what I've worked through in the report. Good afternoon to all the members and to the minister and his team. Mr. Minister, I would really like to ask you, that we see the provinces at our committee in order to keep them accountable. And just in this report, it shows us how many of the provinces have qualified audits. And it's high time that they are accountable to us as well in terms of their performance. I also would like to know the healthcare workers that were trained during COVID. They were made redundant at most hospitals. And considering the massive shortage of healthcare workers within the country, why did we not take trained care health workers and absorb them into the system? Were we really seeing a system with critical shortages? And I visit many hospitals on the ground, and that is a core issue at every hospital I go to. When will the medical legal claims framework be ready for discussion and go out for public comment, considering the massive problem we have in the country due to our badly mismanaged public health sectors? And how long will it take to implement and integrate case management system across all provinces for medical legal claims? And has the system been tested in terms of its efficiencies? And what will the department do to regulate the system and stop legal representation colluding with officials and patients to fleece the system? Because that is also one problem we're sitting with. And if we can eradicate fraud and corruption within the system, I'm sure we could see a far better picture in terms of the medical legal claims that we're having to deal with. How many investigations have been conducted in terms of this practice, and what were the outcomes, as it is tantamount to fraud and corruption? How successful has the service providers that have been appointed to assist with medical legal claims been, as we have seen in the reports presented to us this week, and service providers were appointed? And out of five of those service providers, only two were successful with enormous costs to the taxpayer. What is the status quo in terms of public hearings, in terms of the NHI bill through the NCOP? And how has the registration of medical aid schemes progressed in terms of the NHI bill, as this was stalled due to the Poppy Act? And what implications will it have in terms of the NHI bill? I note in order for medical aid beneficiaries to register on the HPRS system, the Act must be amended. How long will this process take, and what outcomes will this have in terms of the NHI? What plans has the department got in place to address the current slow uptake in terms of vaccines, as the department only realized 50% of its target? In terms of your targets referring to mental health, your outcomes on your KPI state the improved monitoring and support. Sorry about that. In terms of your targets referring to mental health, your outcomes on your KPI stated that improved monitoring and support to provincial and intersocial collaboration has been put in place. I would like to ask the department how many of these facilities have they actually visited, as the magnitude of this crisis currently in terms of mental health status is really at a critical point. Patients are held for 72 hours, and then they are lucky if they are placed into a proper facility. Usually they are placed all over hospitals within general wards to accommodate these patients. This then also provides a danger to patients within the hospitals, because the medical staff within a general ward is not qualified or trained to deal with mental health patients. And then we see that mental health patients invariably return back into the system because we don't have substance abuse programs, and that is one of the largest causes of mental health, and that really needs to be looked at. Then does the National Department of Health still intend to hit the 70% COVID vaccination rate? And what was the impact of the digital vibe scandal on the vaccination rate? Would the department have been closer to its vaccination rate target had it not happened? And how was the success of digital vibes campaign measured? When will the ICT positions be filled? And what are the reasons for these vacancies? Has the department done a risk assessment on the ICT systems, and what was the outcomes? Has the department done a survey study assessment of the ICT needs of hospitals and clinics in the country? And from the oversights, we know that too many hospitals don't have necessary ICT infrastructure, no working phones, no working computers, internet services. How widespread is this problem, and what does the department plan to do to address this? How is the department addressing widespread record keeping in hospitals, especially when sharing of critical facilities and medical practitioners? It's also noted that the budget of health info monitoring and evaluation was only 60% of this budget spent. And this is really concerning when many hospitals don't have any record keeping in terms of the digital space. And then, given the qualified audit, how does the department plan to address the poor housekeeping regarding financial record keeping? What is envisaged to propose to address this? And also noted that the department has registered this past financial year regressed this past financial year, not receiving an unqualified audit. Member Geller did ask this question. She asked, what are the reasons of the department's terrible consequence management track record? I'm also extremely concerned about that. And which of the AG's recommendations have been implemented, or is it in the process of being implemented? And what are the relevant details? And then I want to know, what was the NHI budget allocation spent on, considering that there was an underspend of 188 million rand regarding these programs? Mr. Fenter said the expenditure of this program will show a significant increase in the coming year. I'm happy the minister is on this platform today, because I would really like to ask the minister, what has cabinet discussed in terms of the NHI in this current economic climate, considering we've seen no feasibility study, and will we be able to afford NHI in this current climate? Because when they looked at the financial model of NHI, it was a couple of years ago, and things have changed drastically in this country. We're about to be grey listed, Minister. So really, I mean, what has Cabinet discussed in order to address that there was no feasible study? I'm nearly finished.
You have 20 questions now. I don't know how you expect all those
to be answered. Okay, I'll finish with this last question. That's part of the question. I mean, yesterday, the OHSC and the Ombudsman admitted that they will not be able to ensure all our hospitals will be compliant in terms of the NHI, you know, and because they don't have adequate funding and they don't have adequate staff. So, I mean, what are we going to do to address that problem? Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Honorable Munyai.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I want to firstly thank the Minister for presenting this report with the team. And I want to put it categorically clear. The Minister of Health is not corrupt, nor his department is not corrupt. I must say that we are all very excited that the minister came up front and came before this portfolio committee and honorable members and explain what is going to happen with COVID-19. Something we need South Africans and honorable members need to remember is that during COVID-19, we are saving life of our people, you know? We are saving lives of our people. We're not saving money. Saving lives during the COVID-19. Honorable Chair.
We can hear you, Honorable Munyai.
I want to put it forward that during COVID-19, the minister and the team, they were saving lives. And we must remember, it's not so long that the minister has been the Minister of Health. So people must remember that. So the other key issues that we need to indicate, as this portfolio committee, we need to support all the efforts taken forward by this department. This department is not like any other department of sports, arts and culture. It's dealing with healthcare. So therefore, all the intervention the ministry will have done in this, all the programs, from program one until all the programs, that need to be supported. Remember, running the Department of Health is not like pressing the lift, going from the first floor to the eighth floor. It is a serious responsibility. We can see, so far as the TB is concerned, during the COVID-19, the TB program has been undermined because we're focusing on the COVID-19. Now I can see the department has focused on that program and has performed 100%. I want to thank the minister and also the team collective under the ministry. Honorable Chair, all I want to say as a appeal as members of parliament, honorable members of parliament, we need to support the ministry to continue to improve on the key performance. So in number of areas, in fact, they did not perform on a smaller program, but all the big programs, we have a big budget. There's been a 90% performance, some 100% performance. So we must congratulate you, Minister, and encourage you to work hard to save the life of our people. The issue of the SGs should have understood better and know that, you know, it's during the war or during the COVID-19, we don't concern only about the numbers. We concern primarily about saving the life of South Africans. So I'm so proud of you, Minister, and the Deputy Minister and the DG for doing such a hard work. Thank you very much, and long live South Africa.
Thank you, Honorable Wilson. I see you there in the background.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, I'm back. I'm terribly sorry. I'm sitting here with in 37.4 degrees. I'm extremely hot in Limpopo, and I think we're taking a bit of a hammering here. But let me continue. Honorable Minister, DG, Andre, you know, I accept that this annual report dealt a lot with what happened during the COVID period and the upheavals that we had with COVID. But we just cannot go on blaming COVID for this either. When I go through the AG's report, time and time and time and time again, it says no controls, no financial management controls, no controls to prevent irregular expenditure. And then I go through the last 4 years' reports, because I have been, because I was here, and they all say exactly the same thing. This is the fifth year that the AG has pointed out the same failures in the National Department of Health. And these cannot be blamed on COVID. They cannot be blamed on COVID. There are no controls in place. There are no measures in place to deal with the corruption, to deal with the financial mismanagement. They just don't exist. We're sitting on 1.3 billion rands worth of irregular expenditure, up by 42% in the prior year. Now, regardless of what Andre has showed us, and I accept some of them, I'm sorry, I can't accept all of them, a 42% increase in irregular expenditure in a year is not acceptable. And whether you like it or not, Minister, whether you like it or not, DG, and Andre, you're acting, so I'm not going to haul you onto the same place. You are accountable. You are accountable. You are accountable for the failings in the AG's report. You are accountable to us. You are accountable to the people on the ground. You are accountable to the people who are suffering as a result of the serious mismanagement. And yet we see no improvement. And it is very concerning. The performance of the province is regressed. We had one province with a clean audit, five regressed. Now, you can't blame that on COVID. I'm sorry, you can't blame that on COVID. Because had controls been in place, had things been implemented correctly, had management been acting properly, had corruption been brought to a halt before it reached the unprecedented levels that we saw during COVID, we wouldn't be having this kind of AG's report. We sit on 125 million, a billion. Sorry, Chair, did you get me? I'm back. Sorry. So we sit with 125 billion rand in medical legal claims. It exceeds our annual budget. It's astronomical. It blows the mind. But if you were doing the oversight to the health facilities like we are all the time, it is not surprising, Minister. The health sector here is absolutely collapsed. The clinics are appalling. The hospitals are worse. We are seeing, and you can deny it all you like, but I'm sorry, cadre deployment has hurt you. I go from hospital to hospital. I find out who the CEO is. I investigate the background of that CEO, find out that he was in big trouble at the hospital he was before. And instead of being fired because he's bloody incompetent, he gets moved to another hospital. Now we have another hospital going down the tube.
Well done. Choice of words.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll try to avoid it, but I get very, very angry. It's very depressing. We have a careful lack of medical...
Bloody or bloody, whichever way you said it.
Okay, sir. Thank you. We have a total lack of medical expertise. We can't even attract medical expertise. Because the medical doctors, specialists, people who can offer a lot to this country will not go and work in the public health sector.
Order.
Munya, I see your hands raised on the platform, and then you say the order. Thank you.
I want to request the chair that the honourable member Wilson withdraw the word bloody.
Yes, I withdraw.
Unparliamentary.
I withdraw. I also had a bloody nose. Is that unparliamentary? Anyway, I withdraw without any issues. Thank you, Chair. So we've got doctors and specialists who aren't even going to work in these facilities. The theatres are not equipped. If there's a theatre at all, there's no infrastructure. There's no medicine. We have doctors showing up people with dental floss. And you wonder why we are sitting with medico-legal claims to the extent that they are. It is because of a failure of this department to deliver on its mandate. And may I say, Minister, may I say that the Constitution is very clear on this. We have a Bill of Rights. We have Section 9 that says we have to, it is a must, it is not a negotiable, deliver quality health care to our patients. And we do not. We do not. Just yesterday, we had a child born with an umbilical cord around his neck at the gate of a clinic in Burgess Fort. The nurse was there, and she refused to open the clinic because it wasn't 7 o'clock yet, and 7 o'clock is their opening time. How in heaven's name have we got to that situation? Had that child died, you would have been sitting with another medico-legal claim. And the person who helped that lady was not the nurse. It was a deaf stall, a lady with a stall on the side of the road selling vegetables. Not the nurse. This is where our health has got to. It is appalling. It's embarrassing. The DG was very clear that there's been no improvement in infrastructure with findings on time frames, findings on costing, findings on build quality. Why? Time frames, possibly COVID, I'll accept. But there's failures on the costing. They're not meeting the requirements. They're not meeting the building standards. The costings are all awry. There's no project management. There's absolutely no expertise on these projects. We deal with payments for services of goods not received. How are we paying for goods before we've actually received? That came up from the AG. Procurement not compliant, resulting in overpriced goods. How are we sitting in that situation? Is it little wonder that health is such a mess? The quality of financial reporting, up to 80% according to the EG, not compliant. 90% of the province's budgets for next year have already gone as a result of accrual. 90% as a result of accruals of next year's budget are already gone. How are we going to deliver the services? Because there's no money, because of mismanagement, lack of financial control. The Office of Health Standards Compliance is seriously, seriously underfunded and unable to do their job, with a target set of 22% of inspections of health facilities next year. Well, you want the NHI. Well, you can't do the NHI if your facilities are not compliant. And even the health ombudsman said yesterday that our facilities are not compliant, and in his opinion, under no circumstances could we do NHI at this stage. We've got serious underspend in Program 3, which are vital areas of health. We've got understaffing in every single entity and every single and under budgeting in every single department that has presented to us this week. I would like the minister to please tell me, because I see we spent $1 billion on NHI. Well, please, minister, will you tell me what that billion was for? The NHI is not passed. It is not going to be passed anytime soon. It is going to face the Constitutional Court. We do not have credible and licensed facilities to do this. And yet we spent R1 billion. R1 billion spent on something else.
Honourable Wilson, just hold on. I saw the hand of Honourable Gela, but I was hoping that you finish and then I take the point. But let me take turns. She's now also calling me. Is that a point of order, Honourable Gela?
Chairperson, can you please note me after Honourable Wilson? I just want to correct her.
because it seems she's missed...
You'll correct her afterwards. Honourable Wilson, please conclude.
Well, first of all, I don't think it's Honourable Gayle's place to correct me, Chair. I think the Minister can if he's got an issue. I don't answer to the Honourable Gayle. In closing, Chair, let me just say this. The Department of Health is no longer on life support. It is now totally comatose with very, very little chance of survival when we're seeing this kind of abysmal and abhorrent behaviour and mismanagement. And you, Minister, are accountable. And I hope very soon that you are going to do something about it and come back to us with something positive instead of us seeing non-stop negatives. So thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honourable Gayle, is that a point of order?
Yes, Chair.
I
want to correct this because Minister was not part of our meeting when we're engaging with Ombuds. The Ombuds said regarding the NHI, he said that this is a good and necessary initiative and must be supported by all of us. And he said UK NHS and also, I think he said that we must support NHI. This is the good move that we must take, learning from other countries that have already implemented NHI, not what Honorable Wilson is saying, that Ombud did not support the NHI. That is a lie, or he misquoted the Ombud. Thank you. I wanted to correct that.
Okay, honorable members, now I see you all provoked. And the sad part of all of this is I've not even given my input yet, and I already now have four hands. I think we should really try to manage ourselves. Honorable Gayle, that includes you. So now we're in a position where one of our members has not been able to give his input yet. I'm going to be very kind and take the hands as they are, but I'm not going to take those again who are provoked after what is going to be said now. And now I have four hands, five with Honorable Gayle, who's already completed. After this, you're not getting another opportunity. That's it, because we have a timeline on our discussion. I'm going to take it as I see it on my platform. That's going to be Honorable Chirwa, Honorable Ismail, Munyai, Clark. After this, don't raise the hand again. Don't defend your opinion. Give me an opportunity to also raise my points and then give an opportunity to the minister and the department to respond. Thank you. In that order.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I just want to correct again, since we're now in the business of correcting each other in this committee. The Ombudsman did say that we're not ready now to implement the NHI now. And also, I really want to encourage the members of this portfolio committee to stop defending failures. We must hold them accountable because it's also part of our job. The AG has been saying this year in and year out, that we are also accomplices in the mess that's going on. So when we do our jobs to hold the minister accountable, instead of allowing him to hide behind officials and executives and so on and so forth, he must account. This is the place where he should come and account, and nobody else should be defending him. It is not in our position. He's a grown man who should be able to speak for himself. Don't infantilize him, unless, of course, he is a child.
Next, honorable member.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to highlight, I remember I was the first person that spoke, and I asked the health ombudsman that what does he think, or what does he consider, will the country be prepared for the NHI, considering the state of our healthcare facilities right now? And considering the fact that the OHSC and the Health Ombuds Office cannot actually ensure that, you know, they do the necessary prerequisites as necessitated by the NHI. And the response from the Health Ombud was quite frankly, and we can refer back to the PMG recording, that the Health Ombud has stated clearly he does not feel, he said clearly, the country is not ready for the NHI. He did not. And on Honourable Gayle's input, yes, the Health Ombudsman said the universal healthcare is something that we should all work towards. But he definitely responded to the question to say that our health facilities will not be ready on time, and therefore he does not see that the country is ready for the NHI. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Munyai.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. We are not...
Did we lose you, Honorable Munyai?
Honorable Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity. We are not discussing the Ombudsman report. We are discussing the report tabled by the minister. However, let's stop misrepresenting the Ombuds, Professor Makhuva, who clearly said that he worked in UK for 15 years under the NHLS. So therefore, he supports that is the way forward, because NHI will provide equity in the country. I can post in the group now the what you have said exactly verbatim, not those other misrepresentation that doesn't even that doesn't reflect what the prof would have said. Thank you, Chair. I want us to move on the basis of what the Minister of Health presented, not on what the Ombuds presented. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Clark. You're the last one.
Thank you, Chairperson. I suggest that you get the recording and we can clear this issue up, because I just think that also Honorable Munyai is now not clarifying exactly what the Ombudsman said. Yes, he did say that he worked in the UK and he gave us a very good presentation. He was brutally honest to say that we weren't ready at this stage for the NHI. He was brutally honest because our hospitals are in a mess. He said that. Go and get the recording so that Honorable Gela can actually apologize to Honorable Wilson for lying. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member. It is now my opportunity. The fortunate thing about speaking last is that hopefully one can give some clarifications where there have been misstatements made, which I think some were made here today. One is, let us talk about the statement that was made about the entities having regrets. And I've actually got the AG's report open in front of me on slide 6, 7, and 9, which will speak to what the entities have achieved, and on 9, what the qualified audit of the department is about. So, it says that 3 of these entities have received clean audit outcomes. It also says that 3 entities have received unqualified audits, which you know is the second highest level of achievement with findings. It says in general, overall, the audit outcomes of the portfolio improved. And you can actually go read it up in the introduction of the notes of the called overview of the AGSA. And the heading is DRRR briefing document. And then when we go to slide 9 of that particular document, it says that NDOH years regressed in the current year received a qualified opinion, and then they explain what it is about. And that it has to do with the reimbursement of COVID-19 vaccine-related costs and the late development and implementation of system and processes required to enable the recognition of related accrued departmental revenue contributed to the mistake. So, in general, without defending, without saying anything that is not true, it is what I'm reading from the AG's report. And we need to be truthful about what we talk about. Then secondly, I want to speak on a few issues. The one on Program 5 hospital systems, where We are told that 52 PhD facilities were constructed or revitalized, 21 hospitals constructed or revitalized, and 121 public health facilities maintained, repaired or refurbished. It would be wonderful at some stage, Minister, just to get an indication of which of these are new facilities, because surely we need to work towards building new facilities. And when these are revitalized, I'm certain that the intention is to make them fulfill the criteria of the OHSC towards either being ideal clinics or the hospitals to be functional in order to provide the services which is required by the service, by the citizens of South Africa. This particular program has two sub-programs, health facilities, which is infrastructure, maintenance, and then hospital management. So if you could also maybe, if not today, give us an indication of how do you think we are going to be able to improve on this system, and your targets you have reached with this system is great, because it's 99.5% of targets reached. But maybe just for myself, a bit of an explanation at some stage as to what it really means to say constructed or revitalized. And then the following one, in terms of program six, before I move away from program five, is I've listened to all the DDGs and acting DDGs within the NDOH, and I'm not certain whether I heard that there were posts for hospital systems that had been filled yet, and if you could maybe just give me a bit of an indication about that. And the next one is on nursing colleges. Now, I'm going to keep on hammering on nursing colleges, because it is the basis of the services must be delivered is at the nursing level. And we've been talking about this for a very long time, that nursing colleges needed to be open. But I look at the words which are used, it says accreditation received. And so my question is more about the opening and the rollout and actually getting nurses through the system, being trained, and being available to perform the nursing functions within any health sector. My next point will be towards, again, we're at the stage of interns and counselors having to be placed for next year. If you can maybe give us an indication early this year, so that we know there are no hiccups in that system for these young doctors to be allowed to practice what they are trained for. And then on program six, health system governance and human resources. Your new human resources for health policy, if you can give us an indication of how you are with the development of that and your restructuring process that goes along with it, if you can maybe please share it with us. And then of course, in terms of HRH, your senior management services, you have a huge vacancy. It is on average around 25% vacancy rate. If you could maybe give us an idea as to when these posts are going to be filled or what the plans are to fill these. And something that is very close to my heart is this thing on medical legal claims, which I had spoken about also in the discussions with the entities. What is the plan on minimizing medical legal claims? And what is the planning for us to do a study, or for yourself to do a study, to find out where the crux of this thing really lies? Is it in the services that we deliver? Is it in the training? Is it on the application of the training? Is it about the management of the application of the training? Where is this problem that this, our country is having this huge burden of medical legal claims? And really, I'm hoping, and I think I saw somewhere that it says the target's not been reached, but I thought that target was to develop a policy for medical legal claims. And I'm really hoping that the department will be able to do that very, very speedily. And then the last one is on what the ombud actually said. I wrote it down, and I even quoted him, and he responded to my quotation, if you would remember. And he responded, I said, I'm going to quote you verbatim. He said, the NHI is a new strategy by government and we must all support it. And I am surprised that some members of parliament are not supporting it. And then he gave me another quote. He says, human beings are not born with money, but with brains and minds. Great nations fail because they do not have ideas. And this was in the context of the NHI and what Professor Makoba had actually said. Yes, we're correct. We can go and get these transcripts and people can listen to it. But I think I needed to put these points very clearly. Minister, I'm going to hand over to you now for responses. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I'll take a few areas and then DG, I hope you've been making notes I'll indicate where I've also tried to allocate members of the team to respond. But let me just start with the areas where I want to quickly just make some high-level comments. Firstly, on mental health services, Honorable Geller, we do have a major challenge. The services are not adequate across the country. I was quite pleased this morning. I started in Mamelodi with the new MEC and the new premier, where a hospital, which small hospital, the Mamelodi Regional Hospital, which has been struggling for quite some time, but due to a change in management has made some drastic improvement, including expansion in the area of mental health facilities. But just in the Gauteng province, we know that there are huge pressures, both in terms of acute services, but also especially chronic mental patients, those who need a long-term treatment. We just don't have enough beds. This is an area of infrastructure and human resource investment, which we need to increase across the country. And the needs for mental health services, even last 2 weeks ago, I was in Mpumalanga. It's you know, I think as a result of the pressure of the pandemic, but also other socioeconomic pressures, the use of substance abuse, especially amongst our young people, it's risen quite a lot. And they indicate that many of the new treatment, acute treatment, it's mainly substance abuse young people. So over and above other, you know, pressures, mental health pressures. So definitely there is a lot which we have to do in this regard. In as far as lessons from the pilots, for instance, on the mental, I mean, on the NHI, we did give a report. I think we actually did give a report when Minister Mkhize was still there from the formal evaluation, but we continue to take lessons because the prior period before, and maybe just to take this opportunity to answer, I think Honorable Wilson asked about the billion rand. I don't know whether she was referring to the NHI grant, direct grant. We, you know, the white paper of NHI, which is a government policy, has later made it very clear that even prior to the law being approved by Parliament, we need to prepare the ground in terms of transformation into universal health coverage, so that we don't have to wait in terms of making sure that our services can actually improve, so that the implementation of the NHI does not fully just wait for the passing of the bill into an act. So we're using all the experiences in terms of the pilot areas, the district, the 11 districts, the experience in terms of many of the programs, such as the Ideal Clinic, the improvement, the health facility revitalization grant, the tertiary services grant, which are for training grants, all those which the former acting CFO did mention. The purpose is that there are issues in terms of building the foundation which do not even need, because the main issue in terms of the bill and the act when it is passed is the reallocation of financial resources. But what, through the passing of the policy, through the white paper, made it possible to can lay the foundation and create programs even in the existing budget, because without even changing the financial architecture, because once the bill is passed into an act, there will be a fundamental, you know, a change in terms of between the current architecture of the two-tier system of the public and private. That's where the fundamental change will start to happen. But within the current system, the foundation, because we have said already that primary health care and the public health system is the bedrock of implementation of the national health insurance and universal health coverage. So that's why, as a result of the approval by cabinet of that policy, it was possible to then have programs which speak to that laying the foundation. So definitely we are using the lessons from the various programs which are already in place. There are a number of areas which I'll leave to the DG, but just to deal with the issue of GBV, to say to Honorable Chira, I will not take the other innuendos, just in terms of substance, as usual. To say that the issue of the Eastern Cape case, we have already appointed the Health Ombud to investigate that case to get into the bottom. He did confirm receipt of my letter appointing his office to investigate and come back to us with the critical facts as to exactly what happened. In terms of what happens to, I think a number of members raised the issue that some of the facilities, as indicated by the Office of Health Standard and the Ombud, there are a number of facilities which are not ready for an NHI. It is not an expectation that the readiness will be just by a switch of a button, but that's why within the policy framework, it was very clear that NHI will be implemented in phases, including the preparatory phase, including laying the regulatory and legal framework. But even once the policy is passed in terms of the act itself, there will be steps in terms of how certain facilities will be given a window through which they must improve. They will be given certain, in the policy document, it says clearly that in stages, starting from primary healthcare and bringing in other services as and when the conditions are clear. But once you can reallocate resources, including those which lie in the private sector, this can be very speedily accelerated to make sure that many more facilities can reach that stage. I don't want, because I know that we don't have a lot of time, Honorable Chair. In terms of attracting medical expertise, it is a challenge because two issues which I think many of us are familiar with. One is the urban-rural divide, where many of our highly qualified professionals prefer the urban areas, but also made worse by the two-tier system which we are having in this country. Very much unlike many developed countries, the UK, as mentioned, they may be having their own challenges. I mean, when we had the International AIDS Conference, we were in Canada, in Montreal, Canada. And it was interesting to see that an advanced country like that, for many years now, for decades, has implemented universal health coverage with no, with minimum, almost to zero, a private health system. And they are able to retain, you know, their health professionals. And I'm sure, you know, despite these challenges, yesterday I was in the Limpopo, the rural hospital where I worked for 4 years, and it was good to see, you know, the integration of technology and using digital technology to make sure that doctors in rural hospitals can interface with specialists, the few specialists available in the province through digital communication, and also sharing in terms of training. So we're very clear that it is feasible, notwithstanding the challenges, until we change the two-tier system, it is possible to make sure that we can improve quality, even in the disadvantaged areas. And just to mention to Honorable Wilson that the issue she is mentioning about the experience at the Beggarsford Clinic, I was briefed by the MEC of Limpopo yesterday, and they are taking steps to make sure that things like that don't happen, you know, going forward. With that, Chair, noting that we don't have all the time, let me ask DG if, I'm sure there are a number of areas, consequence management, irregular expenditure, improvement of data, issue consequence management came a number of times. I think Andre spoke to it, but I think members still want to get a lot more the data systems, medical legal, what are we doing, the internship and community service placements. Just to say maybe on medical legal, honorable members, I know that Honorable Van Staten wants details of all the 15,000 claims. Remember that, just to remind members, honorable members, that these are just the claims and even the 125 billion, it is a contingent liability because there are claims. But as we know, as you know, many of them have, as we dig deeper into some of them, they fall off. Some of those, once we go into the details, they are indeed found to be fraudulent. But I'll ask the DG and also the team just to respond to some of those. Honorable Jacobs, just to say that at the high level, it's a combination of services. In some areas, very clear that, you know, shortage of skills, sometimes just the management supervision. I mean, as I've indicated to you, the hospital where I was about 2.5 hours with the Premier in Mamelodi had a lot of challenges for many years, but just through a change of management, a lot has changed. And also some element of training, but and facilities and equipment. But we know also that with the collapse of the Road Accident Fund, a number of legal firms have now, you know, gravitated to look at medical field as an easy prey for claims. And that is why, for instance, this has led, even in the private sector, has led to a situation where very few obstetricians and gynecologists want to practice obstetrics. They would rather do gynecology, but once, because of the increasing level of medical insurance for these various gynecologists, neurosurgeons, orthopedic surgeons in private practice. So this malaise, that's why working with the Law Reform Commission, we're also looking at the legal framework, because if we don't do that, even if we're able to improve on record keeping, on the services, but as long as our legal framework is not also changed, there will be problems. DG, with the time available, if you could just start, with your team, just touch on some of the areas which you have made note of. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Minister, and the Chairperson, and to all the members, and thank you very much for all the questions. Minister, I think there's quite a number of questions, and I've categorized them on how we're going to deal with them. But just a quick one, I thought there was an issue that was raised by Mayor Geller, the Honorable Geller. She raised the issue of what we're doing about teenage pregnancy and in terms of the strategies. I think one of the key issues that you must raise that teenage pregnancy in terms of these causative factors is actually multispectoral. However, about 3 months ago, we've launched a new strategy for prevention of adolescent health strategy that is led by SANAC. And one of the main strategies of dealing with teenage pregnancy is either biological or is socio-structural. And on biological, of course, we've introduced a number of interventions in terms of the new technologies, PrEP, of course, combination prevention. But also one of the key strategies that is known is keeping girls in school. Hence, Department of Education is very critical because we know that the issues, they actually are prevented as the girls go and finish high school. The third one is addressing issues of gender-based violence, as most of the cases are around the underage pregnancy, hence which works out to statutory rape, which also, again, the JCPS cluster is getting involved. So this is in all the documents that we are dealing with to try and actually address them. But also in addition to on whole issue of HIV and TB management, there have been new strategies that have been introduced and launched so as to catch up We know we've got a TB catch-up plan that was launched by the Deputy President with our Minister, where we're putting up strategies on how do we catch up on TB and ensure that we get to where we were pre-COVID. Similarly for HIV as well, there's quite a number of programs with SANAC at the top, but also we're building this into the new national strategic plan that we are at the verge of finishing and that will be launched during the TB Day next year, learning from the past, using the new new technologies and also accelerating towards 95-95 as we move forward. Then one of the key issues, of course, is the issues of the overall financial management on how we can improve on that. I must say, Honorable Chair, that one of the things that was positive this year, I know the AG did even confirm it with the Minister, is that the fruitless and wasteful expenditure that we are dealing with is actually for the prior years. It was in this current audit report, there was no fruitless and wasteful expenditure identified in the National Department of Health, but we're dealing with prior years, and of course there is work that is in place. As mentioned, there has been some cases of consequence management, but I'll leave that to the CFO, acting CFO Andre, and also our Chief Audit Executive, just to raise on how far we've gone with those matters. So how we will then respond to the other issue that was raised, my apologies, Chair, we have appointed the DDG for Hospital Services and Human Resources for Health. My apologies, I didn't introduce him. I didn't see that he was on the platform. Dr. Percy Mahlathi, do you want to show your face? Dr. Mahlathi, there he is. Dr. Percy Mahlathi is a stalwart in health. He's not new in health. So he's rejoined us on the 1st as our new DDG for Hospital Services, Human Resources for Health, which also includes infrastructure. And maybe let me also ask the CFO to show his face. They started at the same time. Mr. Paswama Mokgale, do you want to show your face? This is our new CFO, also not new in the system, a chartered accountant by profession. He has started, so the team at the national level is coming up together. And thank you, CFO. So these are the new appointments, and there will be a number of appointments that will be coming before the end of the year, including the appointments within the NHI structure. So when it comes to issues of medical legal related services, including case management, the SIU work on some of the fraudulent cases, I will request the DDG for Corporate Services, Valerie Rennie, to deal with that. When she's done, then I will request just to deal, even though most of the issues that have been raised, Mr. Fenter dealt with them in the presentation, the own consequence management, accruals, and all the other issues on the audit. But I would like him to come back if there's anything that he needs to stress. The CFO may come in at the same time as well if he's got issues. Thereafter, I'll request Dr. Chris to deal with all issues that are related to NHI, the issues that are around SAPRA, Pfizer, there are issues around the Council for Medical Schemes, the LCBOs, the Medipos, and also issues around OHSC, because he also oversees the entities. Thereafter, I will request Jeanette to follow him and deal with issues of the IDL clinic. The Minister has dealt with mental health, but if there are specifics that Jeanette wants to deal with, just ensuring that we stick within the time. And then lastly, I'll ask Dr. Mahlathi just to come highly on issues of human resources for health, including issues of the nursing colleges. He may invite the chief nursing officer, and then also the issues of the placement of interns and community service officers. On that, I've mentioned, I'd request Mayor Rennie to start. Thank you very much, Chair. And please be succinct and to the point. Thanks.
Thank you, DG. Thank you, Minister. Thank you, Honourable Members. I will try to be as fast as possible. I will start with the question that was asked related to the case, the appeal case, the Tembisa appeal case. The update on that one is that we are waiting, the department is waiting for the judgment on the appeal. There was an appeal committee that Minister appointed, and led by a retired judge, Justice Ntabinde. So that should be concluded soon. There is already a draft judgment. And then with regard to medical legal, Minister has already indicated in terms of the policy framework, We are working in conjunction with the Department of Justice, and they are the lead on the matter because they are the ones who published their discussion paper on the medical legal claims reform. And in the interim, because it might be a process that might take long, in the interim, we are working again with the Department of Justice and this time National Treasury on the interim measure of the state liability bill, which is in the portfolio committee of the Department of Justice and was last discussed in 2018. We are reviving that, and we are hopeful that the bill will now be will continue its course, and hopefully it will be enacted by before the end of next year. And the bill actually addresses the issues related to periodic payments, or what we refer to as staggered payments, and then future medical costs, as well as referrals between provinces in case patients are transferred from one province to the other. With regards to how many cases have been investigated related to medical legal, firstly, the department focused on the investigations of the top law firms that are litigating, and that report has been handed over to the SIU. Members might be aware that the president proclaimed the proclamation on the medical legal investigation, and the SIU is taking over the investigation. So we have handed over all the investigation reports that we have, and the SIU... The SIU has already engaged with about five provinces already at local level with their SIU offices at provincial level to take the processes forward. And then with regard to the ICT positions, when are they going to be filled? As the DG has already said, we are trying to ensure that the funded posts, all of them, I filled by the end of this financial year. DG, I think those are the issues that were related to medical legal. If I have forgotten something, I will be advised. Thank you. Sorry, there was a request that when are we getting, can we share as a department all the reports, detailed reports of the 125 billion worth of these cases or the 15,000 cases? Our response to that is that because these are classified cases of specific patients, we can share summary reports per province if it's allowed by the committee. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Minister DG and honourable members.
Thank you very much. Case management.
Thank you, DG, for that. Yes, case management, as we have reported in the, as reflected by the audit report, we have rolled out the system in four provinces. The provinces is the one that has to have the commitment to use the system. For now, the AG is reporting that of the four provinces that we have rolled out to, which is Free State, KZN, Northern Cape and Northwest, only Free State is utilizing the system. Some of these other provinces have dual systems. They are still relying on their spreadsheet manual systems, some of them, which is not more reliable than the electronic system. We have engaged with them specifically yesterday and today, and we've asked all the provinces to come on board on the system, because the main benefit of this system that we are rolling out is that provinces will be able to see when there are duplication of litigants. Or cases that the lawyers are putting across for a particular patient, because that is what is happening. You would find a case for a particular patient in one province, and if it doesn't succeed there, they go to the other province. Or even if the court has a court order, a court award for that patient, they go again, same case, same details to another province. So the system will ensure that the provinces are able to see, because it will be on the same system. They'll be able to see the duplication of these cases that these bogus lawyers are putting across. And it will also be able to deal with these touters, because one of the issues that we agreed on with the heads of legal and the Department of Justice today and Treasury yesterday was that once the state law advisors, state law reform is implemented or enacted, we will be able to deal with this fire matter where people have information that they are not authorized to have. Sensitive information, confidential reports of the patients, and they are selling it to the attorneys. Those should be locked up. So that those are some of the things that we are busy with the Department of Justice and the heads of legal in provinces. Did I miss anything else?
Yes, only last one, only two service seven. Providers instead of five.
Yes, five service providers were appointed, and they had different roles. Two service providers of the five were doing forensic investigations. Those are the reports that we have handed over to the SIU, and there is value, and the SIU is appreciating the fact that they don't have to start from scratch. They are putting reliance on those reports that we have produced through those law firms, investigating firms. So that's two of the five. And then two of the five, which will make it four, are the ones who are on the ground, working with the provinces, assisting them to prepare documentation ready for them to go to court. So it's two of the four. And the fifth one is the one that is actually assisting us with the case management system. All these five service providers are functional as we speak, and they have been functional since the award of the contract 3 years ago. And for the benefit of the committee, this contract is actually coming to an end at the end of this financial year. Thank you, DG.
Thank you very much. Andre, or CFO, I know you touched on most of the audit-related matters and financial management.
Thank you, DG and honourable members. I think just one clarification that I need to give. It was raised by two of the honourable members. We have presented the National Department of Health's financial statements today, not the sector. And I can refer the members to page 152 of the annual report, where the composition of the irregular expenditure is explained. For the National Department of Health, there is a total of 359 million rands worth of irregular expenditure. The opening balance was 297 million rands. And if you add the 61 million rands that I have alluded to in the presentation, it takes you to the 359 million rands. The 1.3 billion rands might be for the sector, but we have not presented that today, and we haven't had sight of that full figure for the provinces, inclusive of the national. Then just for the interest of the members, Chair, the 359 million also includes the 150 million rands for digital vibes. So if you remove that, whilst the SIU is busy with that and will give a finalization on the treatment of that amount, the remaining balance is 209 that the department is currently busy with. DG and Chairperson, we will rather come back to the committee and present the report as requested by various members on the consequence management and as well as the plan on dealing with the irregular expenditures. I can give comfort and confirm that we do have controls in place. The statement that there are no controls in place and the impression created that there is really a free-for-all in the department and there's corruption and so forth, not at the National Department of Health. We do have those controls, and during the audit, we did engage with the AGSA team by asking them, so if you say that there are no controls, please indicate to us what controls do we need to put in place, and even them couldn't answer us. So we will engage further with the AGSA team on the reporting and how they present the information, not to create confusion and create the impression that there is nothing in place whilst these things are in place. DJ, I'm going to the accruals. I can quickly touch on the accruals. The accruals is a serious problem for the health sector. We are forever getting a decreased budget allocation from National Treasury, given the fiscal conditions and climate in South Africa. That is contributing to the accruals. However, once again, the department and the National Health CFO Forum, under the leadership of our CFO, will address this matter again with the provinces and see how we can convince National Treasury to increase the budget allocations to health. The accruals is purely emanating from the fact that there are a reduced budget allocation. However, we cannot cut the services. Health services need to be rendered, and we are really suffering to render services with a reduced budget allocation year on year. But that's how we will deal with the accruals. This is an item on the National Health CFO forums, where all of the provincial CFOs are also represented in that forum. Thank you, DG. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Dr. Crisp, on all the issues that I were raised. Dr. Crisp?
Yeah, thank you very much, DG. Just trying to connect. Thank you. So, yeah, thank you very much, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, Honourable Minister, colleagues, and others. Thank you very much. A number of things that DG asked me to respond to. There were many questions, but I'll just stick to the highlights. First of all, relating to the NHI, the funds that were referred to, I think the Honourable Minister did cover this, but just to remind everybody that those monies that are referred to have been proclaimed by and allocated by Parliament year after year for many years now, and are indeed the conditional grants that are used for strengthening various things in the health system. Many of those are related to the employment of general practitioners to work in difficult to reach areas, supporting various other posts for the strengthening of oncology services and mental health services, and so forth. So there are several of those funds that are referred to as national health insurance money, but that's what they are for. The standards compliance issues will always be a challenge and will remain a challenge for a very long time to come. But I think the Honourable Minister was very clear on how this works. We have discussed this in this Parliamentary Portfolio Committee before, and I'm sure we'll discuss it again. The intention is to make sure that we have quality improvement programs, that as we identify matters in clinics, hospitals, public and private sector that do not meet the standards of the Office of Health Standards Compliance, that those entities and service provision points are required to improve them. They does not mean that one does not provide a service at those points. You do, but we are just not happy with the quality that's being provided or the environment in which that quality is being provided. I will come back to the Office of Health Standards Compliance strengthening in a moment. Related to the NHI targets, there were a couple of questions raised. Three of the targets were not reached, but the first two of those targets can't be reached at the moment for the reasons that were explained by the DG during the presentation. The first is that the target requires us to pass the bill. And there were some questions raised by the Auditor General about the departments not being able to account for our attendance in the Parliamentary Portfolio Committees. In fact, we did respond to the Auditor General. What they want is the minutes of all the meetings, and those minutes are minutes of Parliament, not the minutes of the department. So that is how we responded, and the Auditor General felt that that was an unsatisfactory response. So we're in discussions with the Auditor General about how to respond to all of the hearings which were held by yourselves in the Portfolio Committee and which the department has attended. The second one was about the medical schemes members. This is also related to the challenge for which we have been qualified. The department, the minister, honourable minister, did respond to this also in his introductory comments. Part of the challenge we have is not being able to have direct access to membership information, and we're not talking about client or patient information. We're just talking about whether people are members of medical schemes and who those people are. And that has been done during COVID for this purposes, using the switching mechanisms of the medical schemes and correlating that to the numbers that we use. Now, to smooth that into the future, there will be an amendment proposed to the Medical Schemes Act as part of the concomitant amendments to the Medical Schemes Act during the time of the passage of the bill, which is currently under discussion, as the honourable members are quite aware, on the line by line basis. But until then, we don't envisage a separate amendment to the Medical Schemes Act. As far as the SAHPRA matters are concerned, I think there was a specific issue about Pfizer vaccine that was raised. Pfizer vaccine, I think the comment was to do with the dilution of vaccine. We don't dilute vaccines. We don't, Pfizer does not approve of the diluting. So I suspect that what was referred to is the fractionation of the adult doses for children. That has not been implemented, but it is done in many countries where the adult dose is far larger than it is for children. It's three times higher than it is for children under the age of 12. So were we to vaccinate children using the adult formulation, we would need to administer only one third of the vaccine. There is, in fact, a Pfizer vaccine available for pediatrics, children under the age of 12. We have not procured that vaccine and are not using it at the moment. In fact, we are not vaccinating children under the age of 12 at the moment anyway. So, but when that is all available, we will make the necessary announcements. Regarding the Council for Medical Schemes, I'm sure that they have responded to many of these issues. The low-cost benefit options and the questions that were raised around insurance products is obviously a complicated environment. Insurance products are regulated outside of the Medical Schemes Act, and there are some provisions for those insurance products to be provided on an exemption basis to cover, as was stated, general practitioner visits. But they do not cover any other medical interventions, especially not hospital engagements at all. So people who believe that they have these products, and even if they moved into the medical schemes environment in low-cost benefit options, would not have any cover at all in hospitals, not for laboratory tests, x-rays, or anything else, and may only be covered for one or two general practitioner consultations in a year. And that is something that we are still in discussion with. The matter has actually been taken to court at the moment, so we are not in the position to discuss our position because we will debate it in court. The Medipass issue is related to, it's actually allied to many medical schemes. If the employer does not pay their portion to a medical scheme, it obviously makes the medical scheme vulnerable, which is what happened in the Medipass case. But there are also other medical schemes which are not viable. This is an area that the Council for Medical Schemes works quite hard to try and engage with medical schemes that are vulnerable and get the members transferred to other medical schemes, especially the bigger, more financially viable ones in this transition period. This is one of the challenges of having 76 medical schemes with so many different packages. It makes the membership for those which do not have proper risk pools extremely vulnerable, and it's something we would like to do away with in the lead up to the National Health Insurance. The last matter you asked me to deal with is the questions raised related to the Office of Health Standards Compliance. From our side in the National Department, we are working to strengthen the capabilities of the Office of Health Standards Compliance, but it would be really nice if honourable members and Parliament would assist to increase the budget when the budget vote comes up for discussion, because that is part of the challenge they have at the moment. They don't have the budget to employ additional personnel. And that relates also to the Ombud. We're in a process with the Ombud now for the past few months of developing the bill. The bill has been formally signed off now by the State Law Advisor's Office and will be tabled to Parliament for permission to take it to Parliament for debate. And the intention is to create the Ombuds Office as a separate entity, not under the National Health Act and not as a sub-entity within the Office of Health Standards Compliance. We are also busy with the Ombud himself on the business case. There is a consultant, public health medicine specialist, who is now working with us full-time on this in the department and will be working with the Ombud directly. Quite a lot of preparatory work was done by the Ombud himself and with the Ombud's office, so we're hoping that we'll be able to expedite this. DJ, I hope I've covered the questions you asked me to cover. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Crisp. Jeanette, do you want to come in?
Thank you, DG. Good afternoon to the Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, and to the Honourable Minister, DG, and my colleagues. We are improving access for South Africans to mental health services by increasing the number of primary healthcare facilities that can assist stabilized mental health patients. And this is particularly with regard to even screening for people who may not even be aware that they have mental health problems. And then, of course, as I was saying, to give treatment to stabilize patients, we have trained and we continue to train primary healthcare nurses to be able to do this. Then we continue to increase the hospitals with dedicated mental health units. There are units that really dilapidated, and the Honorable Minister had referred to this when he was talking about his visits to different provinces, but recently to Mpumalanga, and those dilapidated facilities are on the plans for structural improvements by the infrastructure program. Honorable Chair, with regard to Ideal Clinics, yes, unfortunately, this program has slipped. And this is because at the national level, there's been attrition of the staff that's responsible for the coordination with provinces, and also at provincial level, the teams responsible for improving the conditions at the facilities were organized into teams that were first doing the reporting and the prevention programs for COVID-19. And then later on, these teams became part of the teams responsible for the rollout of the COVID-19 vaccine. But we are committed to this program because it has indeed showed that it brings better working conditions for our staff in primary healthcare facilities. And it also brings about better conditions within which to service staff. DG, I'll stop there. Not service staff, but service our communities with regard to primary healthcare.
Thanks, Jeanette. Chairperson, the last person to invite is Dr. Nonhlanhla Makhanya, who has been acting DDG in hospital services and also responsible for HRH. She will deal with issues that are around HRH, interns, and nursing colleges, and anyway, she is a chief nursing officer. Dr. Makhanya, over to you. Dr. Makhanya, you are unmuted, but we can't hear you. Dr. Makhanya? Looks like she's got a problem. Dr. Mahlatsi, you probably need to come in. I know you are quite new, but we can't hear Dr. Makhanya.
Yeah, DG, on the ISP, ICP, the Interns and Community Service, ICPS.
Yes.
In the meantime, why don't you ask Mr. Kanyile if he's on the system, just to give an update on that.
Okay. No, thanks, Minister. Is Victor on the call? It doesn't look like he's on the call. Okay, Dr. Mahlatsi, let me try and quickly call Dr. Makhanya. Dr. Mahlatsi, please come in.
Well, I'm just worried that he's hardly 2 weeks in the department, whether it's fair for him to respond to the annual report.
Yes. Okay, Minister, let me come in on the placement of interns, because we've been briefed regularly. By Victor at EXCO. The process was initiated, and there was a bit of a delay, and there was actually a time frame that we were given, and the information that we were given, actually it was opened up and then people applied, and we expect that before the end of this month, people will have their allocations. It was even discussed with HODs because they are very critical in terms of the positions. So we met last week of September with the HODs. And this year, we are very comfortable that we're not going to be in the same situation that we've always been as a department in the past few years. So that is on the placement of interns and the medical officers. And then on the issue, on the other issues in terms of the staffing, once more, as mentioned, we have a lot of pressure in terms of the COE, which is why actually in the provinces, one member raised the issue of why we didn't keep the staff that we were able to employ during COVID. Actually, that's one of our strategies, that if there's any money that we can be able to get, we've done the quantification, because most of the provinces have come back to us and said, look, guys, that staff that came in during COVID, they made a huge difference. Now, as soon as they left, we are back to where we were and we are struggling. So we are aware and we're trying our best to try and address that. We've even worked on the actual quantification in the different categories for another bid to Treasury to see if we can be able to bring in those issues. On the nursing colleges, as mentioned, it's quite a big program, not only on the accreditation, because we have some provinces that are struggling now, Council for Higher Education as being the quality assurance body that we're now working with under Department of Higher Education. That is starting to be addressed, and actually there is an upcoming meeting that will be co-chaired by myself and the DG of DHET to try and resolve the issue so that more colleges can be accredited and can be open. So when the time is right, maybe we'll request through the minister that we come with a full presentation on how many of the colleges have been accredited, have opened up, have had some inputs. Of course, those inputs now and the training must be in line with the human resources for health strategy. And with our main focus being on the specialist nurses, because that's where we are actually short, in terms of your theater nurses, psychiatric nurses, neonatal nurses, advanced midwives. That's a focus we're working on, and we'll come in, we'll do a breakdown, who is doing what and how many people are in training in terms of that. So that's what I can deal with, Minister, when it comes to human resources for health in the absence of Dr. Makanya. Maybe at this point in time, I may refer everything back to my minister. Thank you.
Yeah, DG, there were just two issues which I thought between yourself, Dr. Crisp, and Melanie, the issue about the persistent reference to unreliable data and information. I think honorable members were hinting at that from the reports presented to them by the Auditor General's office. I just needed, and I think it's largely related to performance information. I think somewhere in the reports it does allude to the fact that the Auditor General's view was that our information systems on performance is lacking. So if somebody could respond to that, but also from your side, the performance management and development systems. I think there's a view that possibly in terms of when officials have not achieved their targets, there seem to be no systems of following up in making sure that people are held accountable when they have not achieved the goals which they've been set to achieve. I'm sorry if you could say something about that, and then I'll say something and then refer back to the chair.
Thank you very much, Mfuneso. Milani, do you want to come in?
Thank you, DG. Thank you, Minister, Chairperson, and honourable members and colleagues. With regards to the data and information, with regards to performance information, it's mainly related to the reporting systems that we are using for the purposes of reporting on the performance information, which currently is the District Health Information System, while the audit processes from the Auditor General once were used more of a transactional-based approach with regards to the auditing. That said, the initiatives that we are putting in place is working towards a patient-based information system, where we will work towards an electronic patient record One of the key areas that we are currently busy with is scoping out one primary healthcare patient information system for the country. This will have to be implemented over time. It is a huge investment, and also with regards to the change management that needs to happen. We're also dependent on working with other government departments like SA Connect with regards to connectivity. To date, the National Department of Health, from its budget, has invested a lot with regards to the infrastructure as it pertains to computers, label printers, with regards to being able to improve the filing systems through the filing system that has been created and appointment system. This solution has been implemented in 3,150 primary healthcare facilities, public health facilities. We have distributed 25,350 computers, which was purchases through the funds that we got for the grant for patient information systems. There was also a question with regards to our relationship with the Department of Home Affairs. We are verifying the information that are being registered on the health patient registration system with the Department of Home Affairs. At the moment, it's not an automated direct verification. We are now moving into implementing biometric identity verification so that we can ensure that when we move into the primary healthcare patient information system, that when information around a person's medical record are recorded against a person, that is indeed the correct person. We will start the implementation. The technical work has been done, and we have started to purchase the first batch of the biometric equipment, which we will be implementing during this financial year. Further to this, we also have approximately 300 primary healthcare facilities that now has the functionality available to them to be able to get the history of pathology results using the HPRS system linked with the National Health Laboratory System and get the history of pathology results within a primary healthcare facility, and the primary healthcare nurse can actually see it in the consulting room. But that would further improve the quality of care. So there's a numerous interventions that are being put in place. However, it's going to take us time to implement a fully-fledged electronic system for patient records. Based on our research that we've done up to now, it can take us up to 15 years to implement a fully-fledged record, and we will continue to, our target is 5 years. However, it's dependent on the availability of resources. That's in short, DG, my response.
Thank you very much, Milani. But also just to add, we are not in agreement with the AG on some of the issues relating, because even the EVDS system, there was on their side, there was a comment that it's not accurate. And yet we've had quite a lot of people even internationally praising that system that we're using on how it gives data. But we believe that there is a room for improvement in ensuring that the data that we use to measure our performance is actually verified and is actually electronic data. And then on the performance management, yes, that is correct. I must say that we're starting to be quite strict. About a week ago, I've issued a circular where we're going to be doing half-yearly reviews using the performance agreements, as all managers have got performance agreements, just to ensure that people are performing. And this will be our first half-yearly report, and then we'll be keeping people accountable. And we want to improve that. Actually, that's part of consequence management that we need to be dealing with as we move forward. Maybe I'll stop there, Minister. I can see the chair is now worried about time. Over to you, Honourable Minister.
Just on my side, Chair, just to give my concluding remarks, to say to Honourable Members that we are not oblivious of the challenges, but at the same time, we want to assure you that we are committed. We have identified right up front the areas where there has been, you know, particular challenges, as we said right from the beginning. We, you know, it's often said that the first, you know, step in correcting something which is wrong is in identifying the source of the problem. We have done that. We have been upfront in terms of where weaknesses have been. We are dealing with that. So specifically, if we talk in terms of the basis for the qualification this year, it's a matter which we are quite confident that we will be able to deal with, but together with other matters which have been raised in the audit report, these are matters which we will be able to address with the improvement of capacity, and also just, you know, some of the conditions which have changed, including stability within the department. So I want to say that unlike some of the honorable members who are very pessimistic about the future of health in this country, especially in terms of the public health system, there are challenges. But, you know, for Honorable Wilson to say that from ICU now it's a total collapse, I'm sure many dedicated health workers who are working throughout, and some of whom, as I said this morning, I was in one of the hospitals, yesterday I was in another, those dedicated frontline workers will be really, you know, very disappointed and very discouraged to hear that we, as some of us as public representatives, think that all that they are doing comes to zero. We are there to support them and make sure that we can give them whatever necessary resources, and we're going to work around the clock with the teams, including the MECs, to make sure that this can be addressed. Thanks, and over to you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Minister, DG, the entire team, all of you DGs, your CFO, all of you have given us some insight into the work of the department, the achievements of the department, the challenges of the department. But we are taking from this a lot of positives. The fact that you said you're committed, you've been upfront about a few challenges, and that you're identifying where things go wrong. I think there can only be improvements. There have been major improvements. It was a very challenging time with COVID. We tend to forget as people where we come from just in the immediate past, and still for the department to have achieved what it did. So we wish you well. We wish that next year we'll see an unqualified audit, and just keep on doing the good work. Thank you once again, and honourable members, this meeting is then adjourned. Minister, just 30 seconds, maybe 10 seconds.
No, thanks, Chair. Mine is really just to thank all of you, even those who are critical. I think we can only get better with the criticisms as well. So we thank all of you. We're going to continue. I want to assure you we'll do our best in making sure that, and I'm very positive. I mean, as I say, I get really very encouraged interacting with the frontline workers, you know, with all the sometimes things which can be depressing. But when you go out there and interact with the people in the frontline, you get your spirits get lifted up. So thank you very much, and thanks for all your positive advices. Thank you.
Right. Honourable members, next week, Monday, on the Wednesday, on the 19th at 10 o'clock in the morning, we're going to be adopting the committee's report. And see you then. Have a good weekend. Thank you very much. This meeting is adjourned.